kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
Fuck, I guess I'm all right.
You guess you're all right.
Yeah, I spewed like 7 F-bombs before we even started, so I figured I might as well start off with one for this, too. Yeah. And I'm on a roll today.
You are on a roll, but you're not alone. Pernell's here. Pernell, how are you doing?
I had a hefty breakfast and some pumpkin coffee. I'm surprisingly still yawny, but yawny just because energy levels are strange. But otherwise, I'm doing great.
That is good to hear. And it's good that you're here because this is a special episode. We have a guest joining us from Ichigo Ichie, David Ventura. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Thanks for having me.
Did I get the company name right?
You nailed it.
All right. I was watching the ID at Xbox stream the other day and I heard Timber mess it up a few times. So I was practicing.
That's a mouthful.
So how are you doing today? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yep, I'm doing just fine. We had a nice, cool afternoon, or actually nighttime now, raining here in Stockholm.
Rainy?
Yeah.
Honestly, I can't fault that. Rain has been all the rage as of late, and it always comes at the most bizarre times, too. You never expect it.
I mean, you can
unless
check the
you watch
channel.
The weather, yeah.
Now, the weather report lies. It totally lies. They'll give you some like rinky dink percentage, like 5% chance of rain with a side of hail balls or something. You don't know what to make out of it. So you're just like winging it, and out of nowhere, a torrential downpour occurs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But this is not about the weather today. We're here to talk about a game. David, you're here to talk about your brand new game, Hexagroove Tactical DJ. Just hit on the Xbox One. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
So Hexagroove is a real-time strategy game, which is heavily based on music. You get to play as a DJ. You're in a club, and you're working with a club full of party people, and they want to hear some great tunes. So what you do is you combine different musical instruments in real time, drums and synthesizers and vocals and things like that. And there's a set of rules you have to follow. And if you follow the rules well, great music is produced and the crowd goes wild and the lights are flashing and confetti's going off, things like that. If you don't, maybe the crowd gets bored and it's game over and you give another shot.
And how exactly do you do well at this game? Because I've been getting some A ranks.
Thank you for doing the do, Joe. Yeah, I was going to go there if you didn't.
I've been getting some A ranks, a couple of B ranks. I cannot for the life of me get an S rank. Okay. What are the secrets to playing this game? Explain, go through the process of doing a good song in this game and what the hell you have to do to actually succeed while having fun. Because I'm nailing the second part. I'm having fun. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, really.
Yeah, it's a very novel gameplay interface. And there's lots of new rules that people aren't familiar with. That's natural. The way that you get an S rank is you follow what we call the 6 rules of music making. So there's 6 different elements that are important for making a song that changes and changes in a timely fashion and changes in a fashion that flows over time, the same way real songs do when you're listening to music in a club or on the radio. So if you follow these 6 rules, you can get up to 10 points in each one. And then if you have an average over, let's say, maybe 9, then you can get an S rank. So you're probably nailing 2 or 3 of the rules, but you're having some trouble with the others. Do you remember which ones you have?
Flow, I'm getting a 6 on.
Okay, flow. So flow is about adding or moving things in 4-bar increments, musical bars. So there's a certain light that goes around the edge of the interface, and it flashes blue 75% of the time, and green for the last 25%. So when it's flashing green on the upper left-hand corner, that's the 4th bar. So when you're triggering music on the 4th bar, it's going to launch on the 1st bar because we have everything quantized, so the beat is always matched and everything sounds good. So if you make all your changes when it's in the upper left-hand quadrant, then you'll get a 10 in flow.
Gotcha. See, I always see one switch from blue to green. I'm like, oh shit, I got to change this immediately without right. thinking how it's going to work with the flow of the song. So that makes a lot more sense now that it's explained to me and I'm not a complete moron. I'm just mostly a moron.
Well, Well, actually, I have a follow-up related to that then, because I think Joe and I are in a similar predicament here. Like, but I want to get Wade's, like, what difficulty are you planning on, Joe?
I started on easy, but I've been dabbling on medium, and I'm failing on medium, even though the crowd is jumping and bouncing along, and I'm not sure why I'm failing on medium.
And that's exactly where I'm at, too. So, like, you'll play a song, and at base, the rules seem to be, so for those who are listening, like, what the heck are they talking about? The gameplay interface is a giant circle, and at point of the circle, there are smaller circles that correspond to instrument nodes, and those instruments need to be activated so they can play a loop over that goes with the overall song that's being played. And you're turning them on and off based on the beat and also the situation on the song proper. Now,
Purnell just turned into review Purnell.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want people to be like, what the heck are these goobers talking about? So what I'm playing typically, the understanding I have is that when the note is blue, that means it's doing its job. And even if there isn't a euphoria gaze pointing towards the center, the note is still doing its job. It's just for whatever reason, it's not generating euphoria at the time. Mm-hmm. But when you get to a point where you see it turn green, you want to rush over and reactivate it. So it's back to producing a new loop that everyone's feeling fresh about. And of course, right, when they're all playing properly, you got the guys doing the beach ball in the crowd. So you're like, I'm doing a good job. But on one particular track, no matter how well I do at all of those, my hit points start to decrease. And no matter what I do, I always die around the 4-minute mark.
Mm-hmm. And this is on medium.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I see. And you haven't changed it when it was blue and gotten any too soons or anything like that, because that'll penalize your health.
Exactly. Like at first, I was like, oh, it must be what it is, because I was getting a few too soons, because I was like panicking, trying to figure out if there's something I'm missing, mm-hmm, what I was already doing. But once I stopped doing that, I would still ultimately end up dying.
Right. So if you change it when the phase indicator, that big circle's light is green, then you, mm-hmm, get a bonus. So if you have good flow, every change will produce a bigger boost to your health restore and also a bigger flow of euphoria. So that'll get you through level faster. So that's one thing. Another thing is that your health is naturally going to decrease over time as the audience gets kind of fatigued, both mentally and emotionally and physically about the music that you're playing. So it's going to come down. But when you do a mini game, you get a boost back, a health restore, depending on how well you do the minigame. So if you're doing well with the drum rolls, you're doing well with the audio effects, then you'll get more health back. But if you're having a hard time with those minigames, you might be getting a really minimal boost to your health as well.
And I will say the minigame that generally gives me the most grief is the line tracer, not because I can't trace lines, but sometimes when the way the camera comes at it, like you'll be coming towards the camera. So mm-hmm, when it does like a line change, it's such a turn, like, oh, caught me off guard. And at that point, I get like a slight moment where I'm like, crap, I could have had a perfect, but no. But that makes sense. I'm about to give that a shot then. But what you're saying, though, is that as long as you do the mini games well and you're good with changing the nodes and flipping them back on,
yeah,
you're still doing solid. You should be doing okay then at that point.
Yeah, I think when you get towards the end of medium, it starts to get, the gravity of the health starts getting to be a factor. Maybe you have to play a bit more aggressively. And in hard in particular, when you get to hard, then you need to do something where you're throttling. Basically, you're intentionally turning it off, even though you're still getting euphoria, because you turn it back on and you can get a quick boost of euphoria over time.
That's what I wanted to hear. I was wondering about that. Like, is there ever a time when you want to intentionally stop something that is at the time doing well for you? Like if it's blue, everyone's hopping. But I always worry that if I go to turn it off, the game's going to say it too soon or something, and it's going to penalize me for turning the note off.
Right. You get it too soon if you change it, but you don't get it too soon for stopping it.
Oh. So you stop it by hitting the button, the same button that you used to trigger it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
And also there's loop attributes, which I think unlock after you get about 9 or 10 Bs, I think. And then loops are not the same in terms of just how they sound, but they also have buffs and nerfs to them. So like you'll see one with like a fire icon and one like with a hypnotizing icon and things like that. And those buffs and nerfs make the different loops affect the audience's health and also your euphoria growth in different ways. So that's where the strategy really comes into play, where you need to start being choosy about which loops you're using to really get through those hard stages.
Okay. So I like the sound of this. Like, that's why I was thinking about this when, like, we were doing the interview today. I was like, but I don't do the review till Tuesday. And I'm like, I'm glad we're talking to you now, because I need to get, I need some strategy advice from the man himself. because I know there's, like, something going on here that I'm not seeing. It's like a lot of other rhythm games you play where if you just kind of come at it based on what you see other people doing in the arcade, you're like, what the hell is this? And you might think you're doing well, but there's always that guy, you sitting in the corner drinking a soda, like, nah, man, the real secret's over here. You gotta push left, right, and do that, and yeah, you know, it goes. It's pretty much the real potential of the game gets unlocked when you learn it from a pro.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I know the rules fairly well, so if you have any other questions, just ask.
I am actually curious about one thing for sure, which is that this game, from a rhythm game, because I've played a ridiculous amount of them over the years, and this one comes at the genre from a direction that, to be quite frank, no one else has done before. This is very unique in that regard for the genre. So I am curious, what was your inspiration for this product?
I'm really glad you asked that, because I've got a background that kind of blends both art, music, and technology. And I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to learn music and how to make music learning easier for people, and also how to maintain creativity. So for me, being creative in a game, of course, there's lots of ways you can be creative. Like if you're in a sandbox, you know, who you're beating up or who you're helping or how you're, what buildings you're sitting on top of. There's a lot of chances for creativity and personal expression there. But with rhythm games, there's not, because it's right or it's wrong. You're either on the beat or you're not. And you're playing someone else's canned music, which could be great if you like, you know, you love Smoke on the Water or whatever it is. But if you're looking to express yourself, you know, there's not a lot of music games let you do that. So I was trying really hard to straddle the realm between giving someone an instrument to play where there's infinite creativity and giving them a game that's completely on rails, like Guitar Hero, where there's only one right or wrong to it. So this way, I hope I can like take people from the game side of following rules, getting points, maximizing your score, unlocking stuff, and kind of lead them slowly towards the realm of, yes, you can express yourself. You can make music. It's been tough up until now, but we're going to help you get started, and then you're going to discover a side of yourself perhaps you hadn't seen before in terms of being able to be musical and to perform with yourself or with other people. So that's what I wanted to achieve with this title.
And I like the idea behind that descriptive too, because if you think about a lot of other genres of games, even though they ultimately come with their own goal at the end of the level, so to speak, a lot of times they give you some variations on how you can go about achieving it. Even if you take something simple like Contra, like Ancient Contra, it's like get to the end of the stage and beat the boss. Okay, well, there's a variety of weapons you can pick up that you can choose which one is best for you. You can take the upper spread path shot, or the lower path. Yeah, go, of course, the spread shot until the laser comes about, and then later.
No, spread shot.
But like you get options to make that play session sort of your own. Like you get to make decisions that affect right. The way the game plays out. But with music games, it's just like you said, it's usually here are a bunch of arrows or notes or something, and you have to hit them exactly as the game tells you. No room for expression there. So Hearing that, it actually makes a lot of sense where you were coming from with this here. Prior to like making this game, did you have any experience with any of the arcade, you know, like rhythm games themselves, or was it all from your personal experience?
I've played rhythm games in the arcade like everyone has, and there's ones I love a lot. I actually worked at a Japanese studio for 12 years called Ennis. And there we made rhythm games for Nintendo DS and for music titles for Microsoft and Xbox 360 and some stuff for PSP. So I spent the biggest part of my game dev career making music games, both karaoke style and dance style games where you're following something along, and then the traditional rhythm stuff like titles of Elite Beat Agents, Owen Don, Guitar Man, stuff like that.
I knew it. That was what it was. I was like, I don't want to say it and be wrong, but I was like, I know I've played one of those games. You said DS and you said Ennis. I'm like, it had to be Owen Don. Had to be Owen Don. Yeah. Yes.
And Elite Beat Agents. Great games, by the way. That's cool that you were involved with those.
Yeah, thanks.
So, like, honestly, like, hearing that, it's honestly to me, like, you, aside from, like, you basically come at this from both the developer and personal experience angles quite well. Like, it's actually a breath of fresh air to hear that. And honestly, the game itself, I have been enjoying it. I want to get better at it. And based on what you've told us today, I do foresee myself going along that route. What would you say was probably the more complicated thing that you had to come up with as far as this game design was concerned?
Mm, I guess there were two parts, and one part was the compromises that you have to make on music to make it a game. So myself as a musician, there's things that I wanted to do the ways that I DJ when I'm playing, you know, free form in a club or a set or something like that. And then you have to simplify it for the purposes of both for gameplay and for the rules to be consistent, and also for people who have, you know, zero knowledge about music coming into this. So that was part of it. And then trying to take it, keep it in a way that to me felt like you could still make lots of different kinds of music. There was a lot of chance for expression, even though musically what you could do is not as sophisticated as like a full professional piece of music software. That was one half. And then the second thing is, we've been kind of dancing around a bit talking thus far, is how do you present this to people who have no idea, you know, what's inside your head and what you're coming from. So getting like a tutorial and getting onboarding was something really tough that we struggled with throughout the process. We had a very short cycle and limited resources to build the game. And at one time we made a tutorial, which is very different from what's in the game now. And it was like very handholdy and like, do this, do this, do this, do this. Great, do this. And we tested that, and people could follow the tutorial and they could do well in the tutorial, but they still didn't understand why they were doing what they were doing. They're like, okay, I did what you said, but I don't know why still. No. And that's, so we kind of failed in that aspect, you know, because like I'm trying to take the concepts of music and boil it down into, in a way, with language and also with a stream of stuff that's like a little bit at a time. So you're not overwhelmed, and that didn't work. So we kind of chucked that aside, and we talked to Nintendo about it because this originally launched on Switch, and we asked them, you know, like, should we work on the tutorial more or should we work on the in-game experience? And they're like, well, the core game experience is really interesting, so you should double down on that. So that's what we did. With the time we had, we focused on improving the core game experience and polishing that and the clubs and the music. And then the onboarding that as it is, you know, we have like a whole manual in the game, but you know, if you don't understand my English and if you don't have a patience to read tons of text, which is understandable, then it can be a very hard game to get into.
I don't have any musical ability whatsoever. And so I struggled with this game. Like, I just did the trial version of it, and I felt like the biggest fucking idiot to ever see the light of day.
I'm sorry, that's not the kind of feeling.
But here's the funny thing. Like, my oldest daughter, who is in band, loves music, plays the trumpet. She just comes in, sits down, picks up the controller, and she just blasts it. And she's like, this is so awesome. And I'm like, I can't. I can't carry a tune in a bucket if you told me how to put a lid on it.
And I honestly feel like that makes sense in its own right. Because like, for as much effort as a developer would want to put into making a game accessible to pretty much anyone that comes to it, which is very appreciated and respected, mm-hmm. It's something that should be done. At the end of the day, you're still going to have folks who just don't quite click with it and others who just are gravitating right towards it. Like, I always use the example of back in the day, there was a Japanese game I was a big fan of called Poppin' Music, which was a Konami game. And I had the home controllers and everything. I went all in on this game and getting it in my home. So when I would go to friends' houses on occasion, they would have like a game party, and I'd bring my Japanese PlayStation, set the whole thing up. And I'm like, oh, what game is this? And it's called Poppin' Music. And I'm like, explain to them, like, word for word, this is how the game works. Buttons flow down like piano scales corresponding with these buttons. You press it when it gets here. Like, that's the description of the entire gameplay style. And people are like, I don't get it. I don't understand this. I'm like, you push the button when it gets there. Like, that is literally it. And they were just weren't having it. They weren't having it. So it's like, sometimes you can make it as simple as you want, but it takes something more to get someone to go, now this makes sense. It's like, it usually ends up being either someone else's experience or maybe just the right session with the least amount of alcohol. I don't know. but ultimately, sometimes it takes a little bit more than what can be explained by the dev. So, but the fact that you even make the attempt to do it is a good thing for sure.
Yeah, sometimes when it comes to music games, you just have to accept you don't have that ability. I'm sorry I kept interrupting you there.
It's okay. Yeah, we know this has always been the sticking part for people to get into it. So I made like a video series after we launched the game explaining the six rules of music making I did before with just one video at a time. That's not in the game. It's on YouTube, though, but I don't know if that helps. But I think I agree with you guys completely that When you go, the more radical I think the game is at the beginning, the more you need to help guide people in from what they're familiar with. So that's something that we can improve on.
I would say at the end of this recording, if you could drop that link into the Skype chat, because Joe could mention it when we do the review proper this coming week.
Sure.
I could throw it in the show notes. We could have a link down there to all of them, or at least a playlist of all of them.
Yeah.
That way people can check them out.
Because, like, I don't know, like, I would definitely want, honestly, I feel like I've been playing this game, and I'm still probably going to watch the video, so, hey, no complaints there, make sure to drop it in, so.
I'll say, I feel like I've learned so much more about playing this game talking to you than I have just by hands-on. It definitely helps having someone there explaining, like, I can imagine people playing this at like, trade shows. Have you ever shown this off at like, PAX or MAGFest or anything like that? I can imagine people just getting really into it during those shows.
Yeah, when people come by, I've gotten better, I guess, in my 30-second explanation of what they need to do. And showing someone and then letting them try it, yeah, it's definitely a lot better, I think, than any kind of video. So, definitely.
What has the reception been at trade shows? Like, has anyone come by and just, like, floored you guys with their skills out of nowhere? Just any cool stories like that?
I think in general, we found that, like, I think, like, 8 out of 10 people really like it. And that half of those people, or maybe a third, are just nuts about it. Like, they become obsessed with it, think it's the coolest thing. Some people, like you say, like, they have no idea, and then they, like, and I can see the frustration on their face, and they feel kind of stupid, and I feel bad that they feel stupid, and they don't get it, and they leave. But the people that are usually the best are kids, like you said. Like, I was, like, maybe, like, 11-year-old kid one time just came up, and he's, like, just looked with this kind of, like, very sure look on his face. He was studying the game from the sidelines, and he sat down, started playing it, and then he was, like, nailing the most difficult drum and bass loops and everything, like the rhythm mini games. And I didn't have to say anything. He played for, like, I don't know, like 45 minutes or something like that. Nobody else was around. Nice. And yeah, so some people just dive into
and
it.
He and he left a certified impressed. DJ that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's your badge, sir. Start playing clubs tonight.
My guys, here's your badge. Here's your shades. You're booked.
Like, I definitely think there's something, like, when you do it at trade shows and stuff, there's, like, a certain hook you can go for too. Like, if you can get, like, a small group to get around it at the same time, like, instead of one at a time, and then they start commiserating with their skills, like, nah, man, the trick is you gotta do this thing right here. This is how you do the best. And the other guy's like, whoa, I didn't know that. And the other friend's like, he's just leading you wrong. Let me tell you the real way to win. And then you get this, like, weird back and forth. But, like, cause that's, I will say, like, for all the trade shows I've ever done, like, the strangest but most effective scenarios have always been either, like, a time challenge or a score attack, something that has people constantly wanting to beat other players that try your game, so that eventually you'll get them all hanging around just watching for the guy to beat their previous girls. Like, oh, no, that ain't going to stand. Get out of the way. And then, of course, everybody who's trying to beat the top dog are going to be talking together to figure out what's the trick. What is he doing that we're not? It's a And that's honestly exactly how it plays out. It ends up being really effective, not just to get everybody engaged, but also just to push your game. Because quite frankly, at that point, you're just kind of kicking back and watching everybody make scores that you were not expecting them to pull off when you showed up that day.
Yeah,
I am curious, another thing, like, so outside of the rhythm genre, what are some other games that you'd say you've liked over the years that really just kind of piqued your interest?
Yeah. I think that, you know, I like RPGs, and I dive into them, and I love great storytelling. I know I have great respect for the people that take the time to do a great story, and with characters that you end up caring about that aren't just, like, you know, wooden stereotypes and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I know that takes an incredible amount of time and incredible amounts of people to manifest. I guess aside from, you know, big AAA games and games with great stories, a lot of the stuff that Mizuguchi-san does, like Rez and Tetris Effect and things like that, those kind of games where they're also, I mean, it's a kind of a rhythm game, but it's also an action game, and it's also more than it's an experience. You know, when they were trying to use, like, the vibration in a way that was novel and find ways to get multimodal kind of experience happening in the title, that was really cool and really powerful for me.
Tetris Effect in VR is pretty trippy.
Yeah, yeah.
Gadget's Effect was a major shock to me in general by virtue of the fact that they were like, hey, we're going to make this new game. Yay! It's Tetris. Why? And then they released it, and you're like, I did not expect them to take something as, you know, done as Tetris. Because when I say done, I don't mean like it's like bad. I mean just like Tetris. Everyone knows Tetris. There's so much you can do with the concept. But then they took it and made it euphoric. Beyond what it already was capable of, in a way that it kind of revived it, really. Like it's a fantastic product. So I like the sound of that too. The fact that you're a big fan of that, and also just games that kind of put you in a nice zen state.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. So. And that's something that I wanted to achieve with Hexagroup, which is why one of the reasons why we added the freestyle mode. Where there is no game over, and you can focus only on the music, and you control when you have the tapping or the audio effects and which instruments you want to use. You can build your custom packs. You can even turn off the game sound effects in the crowd. And then you just have a music performance machine that you can sit in the dark and look at the lights flash while you play endlessly.
Yeah. Actually, that may be worth asking too, because as you already heard from earlier in the call, both Joe and I have been sucking royally at this game thus far, but we're going to get better.
I haven't been sucking royally.
He's like jesterly. Jesterly.
Moderate suckage on my end. not complete.
But we will get better is the important part. And when we do, one thing that's been I've been wondering about, and I'm wondering if you can answer that, is like when you pick a track in the game, they always have that option around, like it says like basic pack, like techno basic or trance basic. Do you unlock other like sound styles that can be used instead of the base one that you're playing on these levels when you start them?
Yeah, so every time that you clear a genre, you gain access to modify it. So if you've beaten house, then if you went back and played house again, the next time you can duplicate the basic, and then that is like a copy. And then you can go into the basic and you can change it. And that involves changing both the order of the sounds if you want to put them to different mappings that work for you. But we also give you 50% more sounds. So there's an additional 16 that you haven't heard yet at all. And then you can map those in addition to your favorite ones in the previous and do that, you know, up to 5 times for each pack. And then you're making your own basically custom templates for the song. So then you can hear more different house, and it's house that's just built around the kind of sounds that you want.
Okay, that makes
this
a lot
game
of sense.
Is so much deeper than I even thought. Good Lord. What else is hidden in this game? Like, is there hidden in the game somewhere too or something?
Yeah. No. But I mean, the way that I design games is around like a 3-level system of player mastery. So the first level is staying alive. And then the second level is getting, yes. And there, yeah. And the second is S ranks. And then the third level is style points. And the way you get style points is by using tricks. And that time, once you start unlocking tricks, then Hexagroup becomes like a skateboard game. There was a game that I really liked in the 90s called Top Skater by Sega, like a motion base.
Oh, yeah. Where's Chris? Like, you love that game.
So you could do like, you know, nose grinds or ollies, and like you control what tricks you do at what time. And each trick has different difficulty, and then the more tough tricks give you more points. So in Hexagroup, there's DJ tricks. And you do more difficult DJ tricks and you get more style points. And you see how many tricks you can string along while still keeping an S rank and staying alive in each level. I think there's 12 tricks in total, and some involve, you know, working just with the drum. Some involve working with the melody, and some involve being very quick with your fingers and stuff like that. So when you get better and deeper into the game, then you start adding tricks, and then the improvisation really takes off.
This is what I like to hear. See, man. This was a good idea, Joe. I'm just going to point that out. Having this interview today, it was a great idea, because I'm honestly looking forward to unlocking these technical maneuvers. I genuinely am. But like, whew. Yeah, because the game is so, like I said, coming into it, I was like, this is very unlike anything I've ever done before. I'm not familiar with this concept. And I was doing like base level okay. But as you clearly explained, base level is something that you start at, but you want to get well beyond that before you get to the point where you can like say, I'm going to call this game. Like, no, there's more to this bad boy. It's just getting in tune with it and getting in touch with it.
Yeah. And initially we had all that stuff at the beginning, but like I said, that was overwhelming to say, hey, you've got tricks. Hey, you've got loop attributes. Hey, you've got custom packs. Hey, you've got, you know, that would just be like, I don't know what the heck is going on. So we ended up like putting those behind unlock gates to make sure that you didn't get too overloaded with too much stuff too fast. And I think that first step between when you first boot up the game to when you can start getting bees, I think, is the area that might need the most love. But I think if you can get to that point, then afterwards, it's really going to open up for you. And there's a lot of realm for mastery. When you get to the hard levels, I mean, then you're like have to juggle like three or four different dimensions of the game in your mind at once. You're looking at the health meter going down your upper left-hand corner. You're eyeballing the loops. You know the attributes. And you get a feel for how long it will be until it goes green. So you'll know it'll become green before it does. And you'll anticipate that. And then you can launch that. And then you do some tricks to boost up your health a little bit to get you through the level. And if you like juggling those different kinds of problem spaces at once, I think you might really enjoy the game getting deeper into it.
I am a man who juggles. So you basically hit me. You hit a good spot there with me on there. Like, I'm a big sucker for games where it's like, okay, you got to manage multiple facets of gameplay or slash combat at one time. It's not just mash X to win.
Yeah.
So I am interested. Yes. What do you think, Cole? Do you think this is going to take you back ready to go, ready to let your daughter push you to the expert levels?
Look, she can play it until her fingers fall off, but I am willing to accept that I don't have a musical bone in my body. Some things just have to be what they are.
But if you've cleared the first level, then you've unlocked multiplayer.
I have not cleared the first level.
if your daughter can clear the first level, then you can unlock multiplayer.
There it is.
And then when we have multiplayer,
you birthed a cheat code.
Yeah, tell us about the multiplayer. What is the multiplayer in this game? There's up to four players. What does everybody do?
Exactly. So you can have two people can be DJs. So, like, if you just cared about the beats or you cared about the melodies, then you could focus on one or the other and your friend could do the other. But you share the interface. So you can't step on their toes. You can't turn off what they're turning on and vice versa. You got to pay attention to that and communicate. But if you want to focus on just one aspect of the game, you can do that. And then if you want to experience a different part of the game, there's a role we have called superfans. So other than two DJs, you can have two superfans. And superfans are for people that are a little intimidated at first, or they want to experience the visuals more, or just, you know, they want to participate, but they don't want to be at the forefront. So you can launch confetti cannons. You can give power-ups, like health items to the main DJ. If they're like in trouble, if they're losing, you can like spin the wheel, spin the analog stick to recharge them. And you can also time different kinds of bombs and things like that. So you would get a soundboard to cheer along for them. So you can participate musically, but the pressure to beat the level is not entirely on you.
See, Cole, you can contribute.
Exactly.
I can just hear her yelling at me already that I'm fucking up
combos. No, or you can hear her yelling, Mom, launch the confetti cannons. You're like, aye, aye, dear.
The one thing I could do effectively is launch confetti cannons.
And let's be honest here. If more people were effective at launching confetti cannons, the world would be a better place.
It would.
Right.
Just saying.
So, David, how do you see your game creating world peace through confetti cannons?
Well, yeah, I mean, music can solve everything, right? I don't know if you guys have ever seen like any of the Bill and Ted movies.
I have not seen the new one.
Yeah, but you've seen the original, so you remember like how their goal was to like save the universe through rock and roll and unite all the planets and races and everything. So, I'm a believer in that. I'm a believer that great music can bring people together and we can form a better union through music.
You're to that. I mean, honestly, I'm sure we've all even had like just general associations in that regard where it's like, I don't see eye to eye with you on many things, but let me tell you something. At this concert with this beer or that beer, everything's great. Music is playing. It just feels right. It just feels good. Music connects hearts.
Don't agree with you on a lot of things, but we both hate Nickelback.
Hey, even Nickelback, I have a weird thing. Like, music in itself is just a strange beast in that, you know, like, I'm sure you've met the person who's like, I hate pop music, right? But at the same time, by the science of music, everyone likes pop. Like, I almost think for a person to not at least instinctively like it, not necessarily cue it up in the radio, but to not like pop would just be like something's missing. And you know, when I say that, I mean, just like it has that progression.
Are you calling me a sociopath?
Yes.
Joseph.
You're accurate.
But like, there's something to it. Like, there's been songs that back in the day, I was like, I don't want this song. This song is terrible. Enough. But if I'm at, say, like a grocery store or the dentist's office and it comes up on the Muzak player, I'm going to sit there with a grumpy face still tapping my foot because it's still doing what it does, which is get that infectious loop in your head.
Muzak version of Sixpence None the Richer.
Hey, it might be out there.
Kiss me.
Like, boys, what is your take on that, actually, David? Like, the concept of, like, you know, music kind of having, like, specifically pop music, I guess, having that sort of universal appeal despite actual liking of it.
Well, I think definitely. I mean, that's why it's pop, right? It's popular because it's you know, it's the kind of melodies and beats that can connect with the most people and build the deepest kind of connections that most people can get into. So I completely understand that. And I think that, you know, being a snob about one kind of music or another is not helping things. I think just keeping an open mind, and you like music and I love music, and let's just love the fact that we both love music and then take it from there. And we can learn a lot about ourselves and each other in the process.
Hear, hear to that. Hear, hear to that.
Except country music. That can fuck off.
Honestly, I used to be that person. I used to be. And then something happened one day. When I heard a country track, it wasn't by choice. It was like someone was like,
by choice.
I have control of the dial.
I like how he had to preface it.
Yeah. Well, that's because that's the truth.
Like, I was, you know, tied down.
I have a, like, it's more like, you know how it is. Like, if you have a choice to listen to something all the time, you're almost never going to go towards the thing that you already told yourself you don't like. But in this instance, someone else had control of the dial. They picked the tune. And I was like, you know, this sounds better than I thought, and it doesn't hit the stereotypical notes I used to think it did. This is country that I like. And then I switched my position to every genre has something you like, you just haven't heard it yet.
Mm,
because honestly,
and then there's country.
Cole, if anyone is legally obligated to like country, it's you with your accent.
Country music.
You know what you are that means, legally Joe? Required.
Nope.
Every episode leading, you got to get a different country rendition of, like, the SML theme until one of them.
Someone to do a country western version of our theme song for the show. That would be. We've had so many rock themes. We need to change it up. We need something different.
Yeah, see? Cole would be like, you know, I wasn't all about it before, but now. Now at the theme.
This country is really good. I'm really digging this country theme song.
I'm hanging up the call now. Bye.
Oh, cool. Oh,
so, David, you've made a lot of rhythm games over the years. Have you played a lot of rhythm games? What are some of your favorites over the years?
That's a good question. I mean, I've gone through the phases that, like, everyone has, I think, with... I had my Dance Revolution phase and my Taiko no Tatsujin, my Drum Master phase and things like that. It's really hard to pick a favorite. I think lots of people are doing really interesting with the genre now. And you see rhythm games working their way into like action games that have a strong rhythm component is starting to become more popular too. So that's great. I think No Straight Roads was released just this week, actually, the same week as we did on Xbox. And that's another game where they're trying to take musical principles and put it into an action game where the game is somewhat rhythm and somewhat action. And I think that's fantastic. I'm really happy for them.
I have not played No Straight Roads yet. I've heard it's really good, but it's pricey. $40 is expensive for me. I don't have that for No Straight Roads right now.
Oh, I have it in a bag right now. I just got to wait and start it. It's just
of
like
course
he
you
said.
Have it, Purnell.
You know I do. It hit all the notes for Purnell. It's like, you know, it's pretty much what he described was what sold me. It was like action game with a rhythm-based, you know, infusion. And, of course, the characters look ridiculously cartoonish, like something out of Cartoon Network. I was sold on all those things. So just a matter of taking that time and getting it started.
Clearly, yeah, if I stopped buying Rock Band songs for a couple of months, I could afford other games, but...
You put like three of their kids through college at this point. You can take a break.
I have supported Harmonix way too much.
Oh my God.
In my 2700 Rock.
You bring up a good point, which I think as a consumer, it's really tough these days because there's so many great games. You have so many options and making games is as the democracy of making games now with, you know, these engines like Unreal and Unity and lots of tools and tutorials, like anybody can make games, like anybody can make music, and anybody can take pictures and put stuff up on Instagram and become famous that way. So as consumers, we have a hard time not being, I guess, kind of like, how do you say, becoming blasé just to do with and taking it for granted, the amount of content that we have. But of course, our wallets only have so much money. I mean, more importantly, we only have so much time on the clock. And it gets really hard for you guys to choose like what games to play with.
And to be honest, like you hit the nail on the head, like in a sense where you say like, you know, like it's hard to pick and choose because of the sheer volume and quality out there. And yet somehow what I've come to notice over the years of, you know, social media conversations is that people, as a result, their expectations of what makes something good has shifted. Because very few people get exposed to something that one can construe as being really bad. Like in the old NES days, when there were few games to choose from, and you likely were getting games based on what your parents could afford from the bargain bin, you sometimes stumbled across a game you didn't expect to find that was genuinely probably poorly built from the ground up. Maybe a few missteps were taken, but as a result, the game just didn't do well as a result. And you could say, this is a bad game. I wish I got something else. But now, someone will get a game that, I don't know, maybe isn't constantly running at 60 frames per second. Maybe it trips down to 45 sometimes. And otherwise, the game runs fine. And the narrative may not be something to write home about, but it's serviceable and the gameplay is good. And you'll get cast coming out saying, this is the worst game I've ever played in my life. This should have baked longer. They should fire everyone in that studio. And you're like, did we play the same game? This game is quite fine to me. I don't know what your gripe is. Like, it's one thing to say, you know, I've played better than this, such as then and then. It's another thing to go, this game sucks. Because
you suck, Purnell. How about that?
In your face. But like,
That's the kind of love we have on this show.
It's true. Like, I mean, because deep down, I think doing reviews was the trade-off there, too. Like, getting exposed to tons of games, like, left and right, like, as opposed to having to pick and choose individual games, it becomes a matter of, okay, this game, because I've been working with this site since, like, 2016 or so, and in that time, I may well have reviewed maybe five games that I was like, this is just a bad game. Like, I can't recommend this to anybody. Yeah. Like five times. And even then I can explain the whys, but it just goes to show you for all the games I reviewed, and I reviewed a lot. I can only think of like five that were just like, nope, no dice. So it's just becomes a matter
is
of
one
like,
of no, that would be
nonsense.
Awful.
Nonsense. Would be nonsense. So awful. This game is legit.
Make it six.
That's horrible. No. No, like David.
I have no idea where you're going with this, Purnell. I really don't.
It's just a general rant based
I
on
I just kind of like
stuff.
Zoned out and was looking at the light and I was like, Purnell's talking.
This is the SML podcast, David. Everybody gets cold-blooded. And I'm just like,
cold-blooded. That does lead to a good question. With so many games out nowadays, why should people go with Hexagroove? What sets your game apart? Why should people drop the $30 on Hexagroove?
Oh, for me, Hexagroove is a game unlike any other. And of course, lots of people say that. But I really think we've set a new standard in terms of pulling away from rhythm and what's possible and pulling away from what an RTS is. So the experience is unlike any other. And if you're looking for something that allows you to express yourself musically, and maybe you've had thoughts about it but have failed at that, I think I can recommend this game because it's on rails. It's not going to sound terrible. You don't have to worry about being off the beat and the music being off key and stuff like that. And secondly, like we talked about before, there's a lot of depth in here. So if you like juggling those things in your mind, if you like combining elements of action and strategy at the same time, then I think we have that in spades. And there's a lot of depth to becoming Hexamaster Supreme, which is the top title we have in the game. If you can put together enough tricks in a row, you can pull that one off.
I don't think I will ever be Hexamaster Supreme.
You can get to be Hexamaster Supreme. There's multiple ways to get there. The thing about this game is there's no one way to get an S rank, and there's no one way to get lots of style points. There's
you just
many
need to
different
find
strategies.
Somebody that can do it for you.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
number
you
have one.
A musically inclined daughter or something. That could work too.
Well, I may not get Hexamaster Supreme, but I'm gunning for at least Hexamaster with cheese. I'm okay with that standpoint.
Oh my God.
I do want to ask one more thing because I just wanted to think of it because I've been thinking about it, but I never quite checked in game for it proper. The beach ball bouncing mini game. Is that a thing that you do for just for general fun, or is there like some element to your score that factors into that too?
So I guess at risk of perjuring myself, it doesn't actually affect the S rank at all. So we track the maximum number of contiguous combos you get. So, you know, it says like bounce and you can counts up. So we track the highest that you get. And there's an achievement tied to it, too, if you're an achievement hunter. So please go after that one.
Yeah, 75. Oh, my Lord.
I got 122.
Really?
Yeah, the problem is the problem is I keep dying on the stage before it's over. But I have gotten over 100.
Yeah. You got to get 75 and clear the stage. Yeah. But the reason we put that in there is because originally when I designed the game, I really wanted it to be about the music making and the strategy. And in music, sometimes you're not always touching the strings. You're not always changing the track. You just have to let it flow sometimes. And that's when you just enjoy the music for what it is. And you look at the crowd and enjoy their experience. But in Hexagroove, because it's a game, some people that doesn't speak to them. So we added in something because they were like fidgeting. Like I had some players in user testing that were like moving the stick back and forth, even though they couldn't do anything. So they weren't pushing any buttons, but they were like rocking the stick back and forth slowly to the beat, you know, like just because they wanted something to do until one of the blue loops became green. And at that point, like, yeah, we need something in here. We need some kind of like a physical, visceral interaction. So we added in what we call the rhythm ball, which is the beach ball. And you can juggle it. And it's only out when there's no moves left on the board. So if you think about Hexagroove, it's like a chessboard or whatever. When there's no valid moves left, everything is blue. That's when it comes out. And it goes away automatically as soon as something becomes green and there's a chance for you to go again.
And that makes sense. So it's basically the equivalent of like the DJ on the stage pumping his fist up while everybody's getting down.
Exactly.
Makes and if you don't noise. Like it,
if you don't like it, you can turn it off completely from the settings as well. Like personally, to me, it irritates me, especially in the hard difficulty settings where I want to focus on beating the game and the energy and changing the music, and it distracts me. So if you don't like it, you can turn it off completely. But if you do like it, leave it on, go for it, and then get 120, 150. That's fantastic. I would love to see how many bounces you guys can get. So send me a screenshot on Twitter or something like that.
And like 30 something.
Give it time, Joe. You'll be surprising yourself in time.
Yeah, it's just the backbeat, and it helps to listen to it more than look at it.
I think I need to play with headphones because I have a little bit of a delay coming from the TV with how everything's run.
Yeah.
So
the latency might make it worse. Exactly.
And I will say it's also worth noting that if you get good at the beach ball, you only have to wait for the countdown to start using it. You can get it in there from the first drop.
That's true.
Like, duke, bam, beach ball. Like, it's a good time.
Oh, my Lord.
But I can definitely say without a doubt here, and this is before even getting to the crazy loop stuff, like, you came up with a good product here. And, I mean, it ties back to that thing I said earlier, but these days, with every genre under the sun being milked by everybody, because nothing's truly feels original anymore, just by virtue of how many games are produced and made at a time, I think you actually did a great job of pulling that off with this game. I have not played anything that does this. That speaks volumes.
Yeah, it's incredibly unique. It's really fun. It's available now on Xbox. Tell us how much is it? You said it's on Xbox. It's on Switch as well. Any other platforms? Any other plans for PlayStation maybe?
No plans for other platforms right now. We're going to see how the Xbox version goes because, of course, it takes us some resources to do a port every time. It's $30, like you said, in the States, 35 euros in Europe. And because it's Xbox, it's available all over the world in, I think, like 240 markets or something like that, which is crazy. Yeah.
A lot of people get to play this one.
Yeah, definitely. And we have it localized for Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. So if you are stronger in Asian language than English, then we got support for you in that area too.
Nice.
So it may be next, but we can't just go yet, Joe. We got the big penultimate question for him.
Let's hear it, Purnell.
What is next for your studio after Hexagroove? What do you think is on your mind for the next product?
Well, we're working on something now. I can't tell you too much, but I will tell you that this year I've been playing Into the Breach a lot.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you said that because I was like, he's talking about tactical DJ work. Maybe he'll make a strategy game that does more with music, but it's more strategy.
Yeah. Don't forget that we're musicians. But I have been playing some turn-based strategy games this year, too.
A tease.
I'm looking forward to whatever the heck's coming out of that mill.
Well, we
already know I'm going to be bad at it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Cole. What kind of game do you want, Cole? What can I do? What can we do next?
Can I have a point and click?
Point and click, visual novel, dating elements.
Tap with hexagon Ooblins. And win, something like that.
Yes!
I love to find the types of people.
That could be an interesting thing, though, when you think about it. You take a point and click adventure game where a puzzle might have multiple clues attributed to it, and as you start linking the clues together, you alter the way the music is playing during the sequence of which you're using all the clues.
Yeah.
I hope you wrote that down on a post-it note. That's our one good idea. Yeah. We have one good idea every interview. That was it, and we're done for.
No. Hey, he just said he was playing Into the Breach. That's too good an idea.
Oh, my Lord. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything you wanted to cover that we didn't bring up at all?
No, I don't think there's much more to say about Hexagroove today, although I really like talking with you guys. Do you guys talk about games industry stuff in general, or do you usually focus on like one particular game?
We cover everything.
Yeah. Well, maybe sometime we could talk about, like, you know, what the cost of making games or perceived value and things like that. Because I would love to hear your guys' opinions on that. And I can talk from a developer perspective, or maybe we could take it another time.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
Conversation.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Pick a day, pick a time. Let's schedule something. Let's make something happen. Pernell, we'll have to get you involved in that one as well. Yeah, that sounds like a really fun conversation. And it'd be really cool to hear your side of things.
Yeah, definitely. Great. It's been lots of fun talking with you guys today. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a blast having you on. One more time, give us the rundown about the game, where it is, how much is it, how can people keep in touch with you? Give us all the details, all the information, one more time.
Yeah, no problem. So my name is David Ventura. You can find me on Twitter, GameDevVentura. Our company is Ichigo Ichie, which means one chance in a lifetime in Japanese. And we're talking about our game Hexagroove Tactical DJ, which is now on Xbox One and Switch for $30. And we have a free demo on both those platforms if you want to dip your toes in and try things out. You can find us on Twitter. We're most active there, but we also have Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Hexagroove, and I'm sure we'll come pop right up.
Awesome. All right. Well, David, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Everybody else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with some more show. The Party Cast is going to be here. Pernell, you're sticking around. Cole, you're sticking around.
God damn it.
Yeah, I know. You got to put up with it.
Sucks to be you.
Sucks to be you too, Pernell. We're all in this together.
I'm all right with it. Let's get it in.
But yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show. David, do you have any final words to end the interview?
Peace. Be safe. Be healthy, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to David at Ichigo Ichie for hanging out with us and chatting. Cole and Pernell are going to be here in a little bit. They stepped out. They went for cigarettes, I think they told me. Tim, you're here. How are you doing?
Oh, man. I'm just fucking something. I don't know what. Man, I am tired. It's been a... What is dinging? Go away. Okay. The dinging is gone.
I don't know what's dinging.
No, it was Facebook. It was still open in the background somewhere.
Oh, yay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, just a busy week of work. It was an early morning today. It was a long day yesterday. So, yeah.
So you just want to get this over and done with, don't you?
A little bit. I mean, I got a big game to review, so I do have some big game to play. But yeah, I fucking just to follow up on my saga briefly of fucking those little Super Mario blind bag Lego things.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Oh no.
Oh no.
Fucking like, so I had a Best Buy reward certificate from buying a TV there, and those points added up, and then it was like, oh well, that thing expires in like a month and a half, and I'm like, oh, I know, I'll get some more of those blind bag things. And like, so in the first round we got two urchins, two bloopers, and two bob-ombs. I could only get five because there was a limit of five purchase on Best Buy, and I had a $25 thing. So it almost worked out perfectly. It was real dumb. I won't get into it. but of the five, I got two bloopers, two bob-ombs, and then one cheap. I was so mad. My kid loves it. He doesn't really. He's like a little bummed, but he still thinks it's great and he wants to build them and whatever. But I'm just sitting there like, this is fucking bullshit.
You like, sons of bitches.
To get fucking 11 of them and 8 of them are two sets. I mean, unless those are like super overstocked. I mean, it's either A, a horrible coincidence, or it's B, that those two are like hyper common amongst them.
How many different ones are there?
There's 10.
Oh, God.
I now have four different ones out of 11 packs. I'm just like, that is really bad.
Yeah, those are shit odds.
Those are terrible blind box odds. Let me tell you, okay, this is going to go on. I just went full Purnell tangent here. So there was a Blizzard has done a couple sets of their Overwatch tiny but deadly figures, which when I was more into Overwatch like a year and a half ago. And I got a couple of them. And I'm trying to think how I made this connection, because I think I might have gotten one at like some point beforehand, and then I got a few more, and I got some very specific doubles that made me figure out that the cases were actually packed in a very specific way. And long story short, I figured that out and I was able to buy all of them like clean.
Wow. Clean. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a roll of the dice, but I was fucking right. Like, from that point, like, once I realized, I think I had two doubles out of the whole set, and then I was like, okay, I think it's this, and I'm just going to roll the dice. And I was 100% correct, and I got all of them, including the fucking Chase figure, which I then sold, paid off the whole dumbass investment.
What was special about the Chase variant?
It was May, and it was made of an ice blue plastic, so it was kind of translucent.
Mm.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't need this. I got regular May back here somewhere. They're all behind me on this table.
Like the clear pop figures they have. I have a Master Chief that's clear see-through for his tactical camouflage, and then I have the John Cena you can't see me clear one.
That's funny.
That's worth $50 now. I'm surprised.
Yeah, some pops are very expensive. But yeah, I went pretty ham on. I got a ton of those little Overwatch figures. I think it all started when I was collecting like there was a series of Dragon Quest Monster blind box figures like that I would find when I would go to anime cons, and this was like back in like 04, 05. And like everyone I went to, like somebody selling blind boxes had them, and I was like buying some every single time for like a year, and I got a lot of those. I love those.
Were those the slime keychains, or was that a different one?
I have some slime keychains. Yes, that was a different one. There's been a ton of Dragon Quest blind box shit.
Yeah.
Specifically, this one set of monsters I thought was really, really good. It was like all Dragon Quest 8 stuff. So that was very good. I've gotten some Ultimate Muscle. Got a couple Ultimate Muscle blind boxes. 1 year at Otakon. It's pretty great. Some Godzilla. All kinds of shit.
So you like your blind boxes.
I do.
You're a risk taker.
I do, but also it's like I have to, I got to pick it up. I got to look at it. I got to like see what all the possibilities are and kind of decide like, is it worth it? Like, what are the chances of me being happy with this?
Yeah.
And if it's good, so I don't go ham that often, but when I do go ham, I go pretty fucking ham. And I clearly went ham on these Mario things, and they have bitten me in the ass thus far. I don't know. Maybe we'll run a contest in the near future to win win Tim's Legos, because boy, do I have fucking extras.
Oh, Jesus.
We'll see.
Oh, my God.
I certainly don't need four of each. It's fucking bullshit. I mean, I don't know whether they just want you to... I don't know how the actual game of it works, whether it's like, oh, yeah, if you have a bunch of bloopers, what a water level you have going on there. Not much fun if you're a blind bag connoisseur, but I guess you can make Bob-omb Battlefield or some shit, and that's fun. Or fodder enemies. I don't know. Whatever. It's too many. My kid's happy, but I don't know. I'll have like some. I brought two of them down here. I'll probably take two of them to work, and then there will still be four of them upstairs. It's like, oh my God. As long as I don't see them all in the same, like, I have to get them away from each other. I can't see all eight of them in the same place at the same time.
Just start a collection on top of the mantle.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, it gets funny. There was a certain
48 bombs.
There was a certain run of like Lego does minifigure blind bags, which are awesome. And I don't go as hard on anymore because I got way too many of them and I don't know where to put them all. But they did one that was like a monster Halloween theme that I got quite a few of. But I got three of the same one, which was like this plant monster guy. And I just think it's funny to have three of them. Also have dupes of a dude in a hot dog costume. That was not Halloween related. But again, that was funny. So that's cool. So sometimes I don't mind, but right now I mind. Let's talk about a game.
You ready to dive into this?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I've been really not thought about this game in 2 days. It's going to be flying in off the top of my head here. Let's go. All right. Well,
first game to talk about tonight is called Pathfinder Kingmaker Definitive Edition, developed by Owlcat Games, published by Deep Silver, released August 18th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. Pathfinder Kingmaker Definitive Edition is the ultimate single-player RPG experience based on the acclaimed Pathfinder series. Explore and conquer with your party the stolen lands of Galarion? Hope I said that right. A world rich with history, mystery,
and it's not a glaring mistake if it is.
God damn you. A world rich with history, mystery, and conflict featuring real-time combat or optional turn-based fights. Tim, Yay. Tell us about Pathfinder Kingmaker.
Yay! I like it when you bring these computer RPGs over to consoles and think, hey, we need to include some options because it's on console and not just let it fly. Much like I talked about when I reviewed Pillars of Eternity 2 back in February, January, you know, a fucking lifetime ago in 2020.
Is that really this year?
That was really this year. I think that was the first game I reviewed this year. It was definitely pre-COVID. Yeah, it was like I was it felt like I reviewed that game both like way more recently and like 8 years ago. But yeah, so this is a game where on PC it is one of those overhead RPG deals, much like Divinity Original Sin, much like Pillars of Eternity, much like your Wastelands / Fallouts, it's one of those games brought over here to consoles. And yeah, first and foremost, usually on the PC they have it's easier for you to kind of like direct your characters like mid battle and use the AI and kind of control things. But on a console, you have a gamepad. So they do have a straight up turn based mode that gives you an initiative order. So you can move your characters where you want them and have them attack what you want them one by one. And you can switch back and forth between the two styles at any time. I might be misspeaking when I say I think you had to commit to one in Pillars of Eternity 2. Here you can literally change at the click of the right stick. So if you're just fighting a bunch of fodder enemies, you know, your poisonous toads, your creepy centipedes, you can just be like, ah, fuck it, auto battle. But if you're in a larger battle and you want to move characters around and position your spells, then you can, okay, I'm going to switch to turn-based. I'm going to get a little more in here. And you can do it with just a click of the stick. Just a click of the stick. So that's pretty great. Yeah, the character creator, like many of these games, is fucking overwhelming. my God.
It really is.
It really is. And that, but it's just like, you're really, yeah, but, it's like, cause I just, there's so many options. And it's intended, despite the mass of this game, which is fucking enormous, they want you to, they're expecting you to replay it, try out different styles, different character types, different classes, et cetera. So you know, you're obviously not going to be able to see do everything your first time through. They do have like prefab characters, just pre-built, so you don't have to get in the weeds. You can step into the weeds, and at which point you're picking your race and your class and your subclass, of which there are, you know, each class has four subclasses. Each class also has, on top of the entirely pre-built characters, you can, they will have an auto build option with certain subclasses, kind of like generally the main one, the first one it presents you, where the game will just like level you up automatically. So you don't have to worry about taking this, that, and the other thing. It will actually guide you along the way, which I appreciate being there. When my wife was playing, that's what she went with. And I was like asking her what she was leveling and what she was doing. And she was like, it's just doing it for me. Like, okay, well, that's cool. Whatever.
I could see her saying that too.
Yeah, does not offer that for every single subclass, but I think, you know, when you're getting into the other subclasses, things are getting more advanced. Your characters, you are choosing your alignment, which may be restricted depending on your class. There's a lot in the character creator, like picking out lots of different things, different skills, different feats. Like, it could be really overwhelming. So, I mean, you can get as deep in them weeds as you want. The way the alignment system plays out, so it has like the D&D alignment system, which you may remember from memes, which is like lawful good and chaotic good and neutral good, and then the neutrals and the chaotics and the evils and all that stuff. The way that impacts gameplay is when it comes up in dialogue options, when you are, you know, talking to characters, conversing, perhaps trying to persuade them to do one thing or another, you will have options that will be available depending upon your alignment, and some that may be grayed out. Like some are only available if you are evil. So it's kind of like an inverse of like the old KOTOR, like Mass Effect style, where it's like, oh, if I want to be more evil, I will pick the evil choices. But no, you are picking an alignment for your character, and you have to play within that role, which is how, you know, D&D is generally built to work. But video games, you might be kind of used to being able to fly off the handle anytime you want.
Yeah.
When it strikes you. But yeah, not as much here, but that's fine. It's cool. They're kind of the intro to the game is the setup for the whole thing here is you are at this mansion. You've been called by this lord, who is like, hey, I need some people to go in and take over this kind of unsettled badland, the stolen lands, as it's called. And then while you are there, the castle comes under attack by this mysterious other force, which kind of, this will act as your intro. It will, you know, roll a few characters of the other characters into your party so you can check them out. You get familiar with making checks, because the game makes, like, if there's a trap on the floor, it makes a check to disable it. If there's, like, some rubble to clear, there's an athletics check. It has the thing where there will be, like, narrative pieces, I guess, where I'll say. The first one they introduce where it's, like, the place is on fucking fire, and there's, like, a room that's going to collapse, and you have to make your way through it to pursue the bad guys. And it's, like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Do you take it slow? Do you take it fast? Do you try to do this? Try to do this? There's various checks involved, and depending on what you do, it can play out a certain way. And that's not strictly happening, like, from the overhead perspective, moving your characters around. It cuts to, like, a hand-drawn sort of deal. It's more text-based. Again, like, something that'll be familiar, I think, to most people that have been playing these games. And, yeah, once you get to the end of that, an event happens, and you are assigned some party members depending on that, and you set out into the world. And you set out into the world onto this big map, which you will start clicking around and exploring and finding things. And you know, your ultimate goal is to go to said stolen lands and knock off this dude called the Stag Lord. But there's some other quests along the way to, again, kind of help you cut your teeth. Like, I kind of emphasize enough, like, even more so than, like, other games I play in this genre, there's just, like, a lot going on in this game, and places you can go and things you can do, and there's, like, a time limit into what you need to do before you get to and how long you have to, you know, overthrow the stolen lands to beat that stag lord into the ground. So yeah, there's a map, like time passes as you're moving around and doing things and completing quests. So there, it factors that in.
Oh no, a sense of urgency. I can't just do every side quest at my leisure.
Yes, that is this. So yeah, but eventually you get up there, you overthrow the Stag Lord, spoiler, and then you become, you are in charge of these stolen lands, and suddenly this whole, like, kingdom sim shit gets bolted onto the game. Like, so beyond just being, like, your traditional, like, turn-based or what have you overhead dungeon crawler RPG, there's now this whole, like, other management piece thrown in where you are lord of these lands. You are assigning your party members to, like, different advisory roles. You know, you are, you know, holding court, and like people are coming in to talk to you with their bullshit and their problems, same thing. And you have to deal with all that, all while, you know, also going out and questing and going out and doing all that stuff. And it's a lot. It is a lot. This might not be a good place to start for someone just looking to cut their teeth on this genre, just because it is so
overwhelming.
Yeah. That doesn't make it bad per se by any means, but it was just like, man, there is a lot going on here. I mean, there is a ton of game here. Like I played for hours and hours and barely scratched the surface. Like the estimated time to beat is like over 100 hours or something like that. It's ridiculous. It's a huge game. It was probably a bit less than that if you're just mainlining it, but who's doing that? And I mean, aside from that, this is like the complete edition. So there are other, you know, what would have been DLC or add-on campaigns that are already here in the middle of the base, in the base game. It has tons of difficulty tweaking, so you can just, you know, laze through it on story if you just want to do that stuff. And you can also make it really, really hard. It's funny, like on normal, I think, I don't know, there was some funny things about, like, that I was looking at, where it's like, you look at normal, like, normal difficulty, like, that should be the baseline, and everything should be, like, fine and normal, and it was already something like, enemies will only critically hit you, like, or enemy critical hits will only do, like, 60% damage, or, like, the enemy damage was already lower than it should be on normal, and I was like, wow, this game is mean. My biggest issue with this game as it currently stands is I was playing this game on an Xbox One X, and once you get up to like 5-6 members in your party, like that frame rate goes down a lot. Like it was really sluggish just like running around with my party, like, and especially like once you get into battle with like a bunch of other characters, like it was not running buttery smooth. And it was like, yeah, I was just like, man, this is like definitely going pretty slow. Like, I feel like they have all the good, like all the, yeah, that's it. It's just like, just kind of a performance issue. And we all know how I feel about time on this podcast and things that waste it.
Yeah.
Yeah, my only real beef with the game, like right at this moment, is just like, once you kind of get that full party and you're exploring, like things slow down considerably, and it's a drag. It drags on the game, and there's also like quite a bit of loading. And when you're loading in and out of an area, like, you know, it is a solid load. Oh, there's a phrase. So, you know, if you're going, you know, up and down floors or in and out of a cave trying to figure out like where you're going, like it can be like geez, like just, you know, put down the game, pick up your phone, then you get out and you're kind of like running into molasses around. So it's just like, I hope that there is some optimization coming to try to get this game up to speed a little. But otherwise it's good. It is well adapted to the console format from just the battle system, and like the menus are pretty, they're easy enough to navigate. Like a radial menu would have been good when you go into the pause menu, but it's like a deck of cards. I don't think it's actually cards, but it's like laid out kind of left. It's fanned out left to right, and it's fine. And you just switch between characters when you want to go into their equipment or whatever, and it all works decently well. Moving items around is a little bit tedious, as it just is going to be, but it's not too bad. Yeah, just kind of that that performance issue is what's holding it back from like a full-throated recommendation.
Really. Yeah. Mel, if they get that sorted out, $50 on this one, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's well worth buying. It's a fucking huge-ass game. There's so much you can do with it. It plays well when you're not like overloaded with characters. It's just a bit overwhelming, I think, for players new to the genre, perhaps.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. It's such an intimidating game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right, Tim, always a pleasure having you on. We got to jump over to our party cast now. So do you have any final words?
No, I'm sure there'll be plenty.
Yeah. Pernell's going to have them.
Pernell's going to have plenty of, yeah. Pernell's got you.
All right, moving on. It is party cast time. Cole, you're back. Pernell, you're back. Chris Taylor's here. How's everybody doing?
The future is weird.
The future is weird.
How come you sounded so much more excited about Chris than me and Pernell?
Because you and Pernell have been here. I've had to put up with your shit for an hour now.
You could still be excited about
us. Cole, you're here.
You're still kicking it.
Where does it look?
I'm excited.
Given everything that's wrong with me, the fact that I am still here is a goddamn miracle.
True.
Very you never true. Know what I'm going to kill over from Tuesday to Thursday.
Very, very true. Hey, I'm the same way. This heart could go anytime now. I'm almost 40. I'm obese. Shit's going to shut down really soon.
You can be OBS.
And it'd be shutting down even sooner.
Yeah, count very your true. Blessings. You could be OBS. So let's just be honest here.
OBS is in the red, and so is my cholesterol.
That's to Dark Mika, who's also here.
Oh my lord, Dark Mika! Yes, she is here.
Not on the phone call.
No,
but
no.
In spirit.
Yeah.
She's
I asked her if she wanted to come on, but she was like, no. And then that led to Cole being like, do you want me to do reviews tonight? And I'm like, nah, don't worry about it. And now it's just party time and OBS is giving me shit. And
I'm not going to do reviews either. So,
fuck.
I'm just kidding.
It's the Pernell show.
I'm going to get way too much backlog.
There has to be a specific amount of reviews per show. And I didn't want to throw the universe off balance by making there be 8 games instead of 9.
Hey, I like having my show in threes.
What? Nine? I thought this was 5.
But Tim did one.
Tim did
so
one.
So it's 6.
Ooh, Tim, what did he do? What did he break?
He broke Pathfinder Kingmaker.
Oh, man, I hope he made the king.
He did.
Did he build him out of pathways?
I don't know.
Oh.
It's a mystery.
Most celebrity deaths in SML video game reviews. Always occurs in threes.
I like my formatting in my write-up to be specific.
Your three-matting.
Yeah.
Very symmetrical.
Oh, no.
Root Beer wants to do a review. Root Beer, what do you want to review, Root Beer? What do all of you want to review?
Some quality games. Perfect good game of Game Ball.
I mean, now you're asking too much.
Cole, I know you want to review Drake Hollow.
Uh-huh.
That's next episode.
I love me some Drake Hollow. Spoiler alert.
And I want to chill to the next episode. Making
I
up stupid
review Moon,
stupid.
But I already bought it.
How is it? I saw you streaming it.
Oh, it's real good. I quite enjoy it. It was frustrating at first because I didn't really understand it. And then Onion Games is like, oh, by the way, here's the instruction book for free. I had a friend, thanks.
I had a friend literally claim that the game made them feel stupid.
Why?
I didn't quite get it because the way he described the game, it sounded more like the real issue with the game, if you're coming into it, you know, with like, you know, fresh eyes, is the fact that it's heavily built. And Chris can correct me if I misunderstood the friend. But it's heavily built around the idea of like waiting for the right time to be somewhere and utilizing that moment to do whatever you have to do. But if you're not waiting, or if it's not the right time, you'd spend a lot of time waiting around too.
Well, there's always something to do. It's kind of like, you know, there's a day and night cycle. And yeah, sometimes you have to like wait for something to happen like at nighttime or a certain time during the day. And you only have so much energy that you can be around. But the more you progress in the game, the more you can like kind of be around, like staying awake and stuff. And you can sleep to make like time pass as well. And time does pass pretty fast. So it's one of those things like you kind of get into the rhythm. And the other thing is I've played Tulip, which is by, you know, more or less the same people. So like that also has the day and night cycle and, you know, certain things have to happen at certain times. But the game's very forgiving in terms of like if you didn't get it this time, you can get it next time.
Okay. So,
yeah, you know, you don't have to feel too much pressure in this game because there's not like an overarching like time limit to do things. You just kind of like keep going and feel the love wherever you can. And yes, I also love Onion Games. I've got, well, all of them so far.
What are some of the other games they did?
Dandy Dungeon, Legend of Brave Yamada, and Blackbird.
Oh, that was them.
Yeah, okay. And also Blackbird, which is a defender-style shooter, where you play the soul of a dead girl who comes back as a monstrous crow who zaps all the people that basically wronged her. Basically, you tear down all of society for letting a poor girl starve in the streets.
That's my kind of game.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's got the soundtrack is opera in a fake language.
Yeah, interesting.
Huh? Yeah, Onion Games are incredible. And when they go on sale, like they've been going on pretty good sales lately, and I recommend everybody pick them up. And then if you join their newsletter, they will send you another free, it's called Million Onion Hotel, and it's like a free kind of mini game.
On Switch or on Steam or?
I think it's on browser or mobile. I haven't played it yet, so I don't know. Oh, and you also get mini soundtracks for Dandy Dungeon and some other stuff like wallpapers and things. So y'all should join the Onion newsletter. I would.
This episode brought to you by Onion.
I know, that's the thing. I've never gotten a review code from them. I've only purchased their games, and yet here I am selling them. So
I know.
You're welcome.
You're just a glutton for onions.
I'm a glutton for their weird-ass awesome games, yes.
And I'm fighting with an onion as we talk about onions. So this is an oniony scenario right now. I like that.
Oh, I hate onions so much. Like, not the developer, onions, just actual onions. Yeah. I despise them.
I'm okay with green onions. Any other onion, kiss my ass.
I like onions.
Gross.
Onion.
I don't like the way that popular California fast food restaurant In-N-Out Burger does onions. They give you a solid slice, and they just lay it across a burger. Unless you ask for the animal style or some other different whatever, like some off the cuff or some like secret way of asking for it to be made normally.
The funny part is that actually sounds aesthetically pleasing, at least, to have like a slice of onion going across your sandwich. Like, it's very uniform. But I just hate onions.
So. I mean, there's
a little, it's like you got lettuce, tomato, onion, and they're all slices of their various elements. What's not to like is like, as opposed to slice of tomato, slice of lettuce, and then these little onion jimmies. It just doesn't flow, man.
I like onions.
Root beer. I eat raw onions with hummus.
Why would you do that to hummus? Onions if you can't tell it's an onion anymore.
Yeah, like, I can't believe
when it's dried and all that shit. That I can't even do with them caramelized. But like dried onions, minced up tiny
powder.
Ass
onion powder.
Shit,
I can deal with
onion powder. Yeah. I love the taste, but I have a lot of texture aversions with food. And
I'm
onions, onions get me, man. I can't do it.
I like all of the above except for the solid slice of onion in a burger that's otherwise also bad.
Whereas I'm a grown ass man who still has to have his friends like put onion in food without telling me so I can eat around it. Or like, oh, pretty, you don't eat onion? No,
you son of a bitch.
But that brings me to a fun story because my husband loves hunting, obviously, because he's a redneck, right? And nobody's surprised by that. But I was
I'm very surprised, Cole.
I was a vegetarian when he and I got together. And I was always very adamant that I wouldn't eat deer meat no matter what. But I started to phase out of the vegetarianism there at one point. And then he was like, you know what? He goes, I'm going to grill us some burgers. I was like, okay, cool. Thinking it's hamburgers. I don't eat deer. Fuck, you know, it's fine. It's a hamburger. And then after I ate it, he was like, oh, those were venison burgers. And I was like, this is grounds for divorce. But also, I really fucking love venison now. And we usually have at least two deer's worth of meat in the freezer at any given time.
It's like, did he do you a favor or did he screw you over? We don't know anymore because it's delicious. Yeah,
he did me a favor in the end, I guess. But it did really kind of fuck with my plans there. If it weren't for my love of cheese, I'd be a vegan. I love cheese, so I can't let that shit go.
Yeah, no.
Nicole would appreciate that we have had a hamburger helper with deer burger
it's before. Good. Yeah.
It's a great meal, I hear.
There's something that I make. There's a recipe that went around in my mom's group for a really long time where it was like you take either a pork roast or a beef roast, put it in the crock pot, and you put a packet of dry au jus, a packet of dry ranch seasoning, a stick of butter, and four pepperoncinis in on it, right? And you put it in the crock pot and you let it go all day. And the joke was that we called it pony roast. Because you could just put fucking any meat in there and it would work. But the funny part was, is like, I made it once with deer meat. And I swear on my life, nothing else tastes as good as the deer meat with that recipe. It looks like a cat vomited it up. It looks horrible. But it tastes so good.
You make it sound so appetizing.
Yeah, I mean, just from the looks of it, like, you will never see me post a picture and be like, look, it's pony roast, because fuck no, it's gross looking. But it just falls apart in your face, and you're like, oh, it's so good.
Get to your mouth.
Yeah, the thing with it is, oh, it smells incredible, though. Like, you can look over how it looks if you can smell it. The reason it looks so odd is because you put a whole stick of butter in it and it just melts. And so, like, it has like kind of like a butter soup hanging out around it. but because you don't put any other liquid, you need that stick of butter to absorb to keep the meat moist, especially if you're doing something lean like deer. But deer, because it's so gamey and can be tough to make that recipe, it takes 12 hours in the crock pot.
Jeez. Whoa.
And it is low and slow, and you are taunted by that motherfucker all day long.
Well, that was for baby puke.
Yeah, within 30 minutes of having put it in there, you're just like, today is going to suck because I have to smell this all day. But it's so good.
Baby puke.
No, cat puke. It looks like cat puke.
I'm confusing with Indian food.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I like
which curry, I love.
It just looks like baby puke.
I love Indian food, but yeah, it looks like my gut.
I have not had much Indian food. My exposure to Indian food was my buddy Kunal's engagement party where they served all Indian food. I didn't know what the fuck anything was. Some of it was good. All of it was spicy.
Yeah.
Some of it was gross as fuck.
Delicious. I'm wondering what the gross was because I feel like something's missing.
Oh, I don't know. It's been like over a year, 2 years since that happened, so I don't know what the hell anything was. But
palak paneer, baby. Get it. And it looks like hardcore baby puke, but man, is it good.
Oh, my God. On that note, should we talk about games?
Yes.
As long as they're baby puke games.
Nope, they are not baby puke games. Or at least I hope they're not baby puke games. That would suck if they are.
That is true. but it would be well timed that I could describe it as such.
Yeah. I hope not.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm here to talk about Baby Puke Quest.
No, we got to get to this. First game to talk about tonight is called Liege Dragon, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released August 28th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. The evil dragon coming back to life. The kingdom of Blaze was thrown into confusion. Yuren, who has lost his memory, witnesses a village being destroyed and heads for the capital, hoping to find something he could do in this time of destruction. Here begins an adventure to find the dragon tools of the three heroes to confront the revived dragon and bring peace to the world. Chris, tell us about this one.
Well, first off, I didn't even realize until you said it that the hero's name is Yuren.
Or Yuran.
Yeah, it's Y-U-R-A-N, and Uran. I was like, Uran, or something like that, and then you're like, urine, and I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah.
I
just...
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. I just... No, I really didn't. I was like, yeah.
We're 12.
Yeah. Anyways, so oh, yeah.
Well, we... Speak for yourself.
Sorry. I'm just about to puke all over everything. No. Anyways. I had to incorporate it somehow. Okay, yes. Liege Dragon. So this is the newest game. Well, presumably newest. I mean, they come out so often. But the newest game from the Kemco X Create, you know, infinite combo of games that are kind of like ported from mobile sort of stuff in Japan especially, and then brought over to the U.S. into consoles and such. Because like they scatter across like all kind of consoles and systems and stuff, and they don't release their stuff really in order, or you know, like whatever, it's kind of hard to know like how new the game really is, except to say that it does seem very new. That looks delicious.
Yeah, it does.
Anyways,
just gonna leave that up the whole show.
Fortunately, I've already eaten, so I'm not gonna be like distracted by it.
But you can see where I say that the gravy kind of has that questionable aesthetic.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, yeah. I live in Texas, like a lot.
Kemco's gonna
like
listen to this and be like, "What the hell are they talking about?"
It's well, the proper name is Mississippi Roast, but we call it Pony Roast because you could basically roast anything except for a pony. Probably even a pony if you were French. Oh,
Lord. So you can, it's called Pony Roast because you can roast anything but a pony, but it's not called Baby Roast.
I mean.
back to Liege Dragon.
Okay, so this appears to be like a much newer game in the X-Create thing, and there's a few reasons why I think that is. For one, the scrolling in towns and dungeons and such is silky smooth. This game actually runs at a frame rate that makes you think it was made in the last, you know, within the last 20 years. So yes, it does look new. But they've changed a lot, like, actually from the usual formulae. But then again, not everything has changed. So for one, and you'll notice this from the screenshots immediately, is that instead of having your characters appear on screen in sprite form, and then the monsters appear on the other side of the screen, like a Final Fantasy game or whatnot. I mean, an old Final Fantasy game. I don't know what they're doing now. I think they're still doing that. Instead, battles are presented in first person, which is the first time I've seen that in an X-Create jam. Because normally that's the territory of Hit Point. Like, they present all their stuff in first person in battles. So yeah, now it's first person. And instead of fighting just like, you know, if you're fighting a goblin or something, and instead of it being one goblin with a health bar, it's a whole stack of goblins, like, just copied and pasted all over the place. There's just, like, this big stack of goblins, and as you attack the goblins and their little life bar, the green bar there, goes down, they start to fly off the screen. So you're basically fighting a stack of enemies instead of just one enemy, except in the case of a boss like this Manticore here.
Interesting mechanic.
Yeah, it is interesting. So yeah, the enemies are kind of like stacked against you instead of just showing up as one enemy, but functionally they kind of just do the same thing. I mean, for this big pile of enemies, there's only one move that happens. So that's it really just seems to be a style choice more than anything. And I like it, actually. It kind of, it reminds me of something like Dragon Force or some other kind of obscure RPG where you're, you know, fighting a lot of enemies at once kind of deal. And it's fun to watch, like, you know. And the other thing that's fun is that, like, now that the battles are, like, first person and kind of, like, a little fancier looking, then there's, like, a lot of room for these big, giant spectacle, like, spells and summons and things like that, which I've always felt X-Create games are kind of lacking, like, the special effects department. So I really... I really enjoy that. And but so there's another thing that has been eliminated in terms of like what you'd usually see in one of these kind of games, and that's the world map. Rather, your ability to move around on such. While you do move around on the world map in cutscenes, you actually don't have that freedom in the game. Instead, it is literally that a list appears and you choose the place where you want to go. There's a marker next to the place where you need to go, but you can backtrack to any place at any time and, you know, get there without incident. So fast travel is now the theme of the day, which honestly, I feel like that's a good move because, you know, the world map always felt redundant in Chemco X Create games because, like, the maps are usually pretty limited. It's the same exact thing as walking around, like, you know, there's no exploration aspect. You're always, like, kind of, you know, on a rail anyway to get to your next destination. You never have a choice of destinations.
Yeah, I've seen Chemco games where, like, the further destinations won't even be on the map until you hit a certain part of the story, and then they'll appear. Yeah,
they always put you on rails with the linear, like, point A to point B thing. And honestly, the world map just doesn't ever look good in these games. Again, that's just for the X-Create set. I actually think that Hitpoint did a better job with their world building. So I really actually like that they took away the walking around on the world map type thing, and instead you're just choosing areas. The other cool thing is that now they can populate the map with much more realistic depictions of, like, towns and stuff. So this game has a pretty dark story because it's about an evil dragon that comes back to life, and you have to, you know, it's normal RPG stuff. In the overall framing, it's, you know, evil dragon comes back to life, starts killing everybody, and your chosen heroes have to go find the items from the heroes of ancient legend and smite the beast. However, you know, just like, well, without getting into too many spoilers, let's just say a lot of destruction and death happens in this game, which is a little different from the normally chill X-Create, like, batch. And so, and because you can't actually just freely wander, like, you'll actually see towns that you didn't go to get destroyed. And, like, they can actually show you that because it's not like it was possible for you to go there anyway. So it kind of, like, it lends itself to adding a little bit more spice to, like, the events and, like, cutscenes. And the other thing is that it allows the game to focus way more on storytelling, which it does. There's a full hour of storytelling before I got to fight my first enemy.
Oh.
Yeah, that's not quite Dragon Quest 7 level. That one legendarily has a 2-hour wait before you fight your first slime. But they really wanted to, like, actually establish the characters, the story. It's not just, you know, well, in the context of Chemco X Create games, it's not just that you, like, come across a character and they instantly, like, join you for no real reason. That does happen with one character, actually, and it's almost like a joke. Like, you meet a character who literally, like, follows, you know, joins you three sentences later, and he's just a permanent member of the party. And but anyways, so I like that they're going in this direction of much more in-depth storytelling, and, you know, like I said, less, it feels like less padding. Which is really nice, because I think that's a good thing. So the other part of this is that they've simplified some of the systems. Now, the weapons eating weapons system is back, so you can actually use the game menu to kind of, like, if you get a new weapon and you like this weapon, you can absorb all the other weapons that you get, and enemies drop weapons constantly. So, like, you can, instead of selling them, which is an option, you can actually just have your current sword eat all the other swords in your inventory, and it gets a stat boost. And
yeah, I love that system.
Yeah, it's a good system. And as a bonus, for the first time that I've seen, you don't have to wait. If a weapon has, let's say, a vitality boost of, like, 2, if you eat that weapon, you get, and you don't have, you know, all your slots taken up, you can actually get that vitality too. You don't have to wait until it builds up into a vitality 20 by eating other vitality weapons. Usually you would have to wait, and so you'd end up with this inventory full of swords that you're working on so that you can transfer the power. And then there's a system of using ores, which are rare enemy drops, or they're dropped after bosses, to like further kind of customize your weapons in fun ways. The lottery system's back. It's exactly the same as it always was, or at least it is in the more recent games. Enemies randomly drop points or tickets, and when you get a ticket, you can play a game to try and get a better item. The game forces you to live with the results by forcing you to autosave, so you can't save scum these mini games, but that's okay because they're not like, you know, they're just fun. And of course, they also have them kind of scaled to your level, so you can't like get the game breaking final sword like immediately in the game anymore, I don't think, unless you get like a 5-star rare roll, which I have not. So, but yeah, that's all cool. The other thing I like, finally, and this is the last bit of the system I think I'm going to talk about, is that now magic, which, you know, the Chemco X creates that almost every game has a different way of managing their magic. This one is probably my favorite so far, because what it is now is that instead of your characters learn skills when they level up, physical arts that are unique to that character. However, also, every enemy drops jewels in one of four elements. And what you do is you collect those jewels, and when you get enough, you can unlock a magic spell in that element for any character. So it's 100% customizable magic sets for each character.
Nice.
Yeah, so if you get like 20 wind points, you can unlock a steel move. Now, one of your characters will learn how to steal as part of his natural progression, although it's a slightly different move. But you can also, like, you know, add that to a different character or something like that. So you're now just collecting points in distributing them however you wish. Like, none of the characters have a specific elemental affinity. However, you can build them that way. And when you learn one spell and another spell, that will unlock a combination spell that you can then also unlock. So lots and lots of customizability, and that is really fun. Okay, I lied. There's one more. You actually get points for defeating a certain amount of certain types of enemies. You're given this, I forget what the word they use for, it's some French word, but basically a monster dictionary. And if you fight enough battles that it will specify of a certain type of monster, or if you fill up enough entries, you will get a prize. And sometimes this prize is magic spells, sometimes it's weapons. One of the most powerful spells in the game is actually unlocked this way. So it's definitely good. It's like a completely optional, like, mini quest to defeat as many of one kind of monster as you can. So really cool stuff. I'm actually really enjoying all of the directions that this game is taking versus the other ones.
You know what I enjoy? I enjoy the fact that No Time for Games just gifted a sub to Heaven Smile.
Oh, my.
Isn't that awesome, Purnell? What do you think of that?
Fucking yeah!
That's right, Purnell.
I was really close. I was about to say, what do you mean?
The hell are you talking about?
The heck is going on? Oh.
What do you think real, Purnell?
That imposter!
Okay, so Liege Dragon, $15 on this one. What are you thinking?
If you, like, basically, if the Chemco X Create games, like, it's a buy it. And I'm going to say that, like, people who aren't familiar with the Chemco X Create games so far, this would be a great place to jump in, because I think this game kind of, it gets to the best parts of these games much quicker than the others. It doesn't feel as much like a game that was just made in RPG Maker and then, you know, copy pasted across, you know, several chapters, which is a common criticism of the X-Create set. Like, it really seems like more care has gone into this one. So, and if you're a longtime fan, this is going to have some brand new stuff that you're bound to enjoy, because I really enjoyed it myself. So I'm giving this one a buy it for sure.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Nexomon Extinction, developed by Vivo Interactive, published by P-Cube, released August 28th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99, coming soon to Xbox One. There was some kind of delay with it. I'm not sure what happened, but it should be out soon. Nexomon Extinction is a return to a classic monster catching games with a brand new story, eccentric characters, and over 300 unique Nexomon to trap, tame, and evolve. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Let's get this out of the way. This is freaking Pokemon.
Okay.
Okay. Let's get that out of the way. Now,
obviously, with that said, Pokemon has been around for a long time, and to be quite honest, I can't. It's about time someone else attempted to do a game like this, just to see what would someone else do if they took the reins on a similar concept. So I was all for it, honestly, especially with everybody complaining about Pokemon lately. It's like, okay, let's see what this other studio can do. And I think this was originally a mobile game that got ported to consoles, which I'm also all for because consoles are where I play games. So there you have it.
Do you not have phones?
Oh, God, you bastard.
Where's Cole? She loves that joke.
You beat me to it, and I'm sad about it.
That guy will never live that shit down.
Ever.
Ever. Ever. Ever. Ever. So, this game, though, this game takes the Pokemon formula and does a few things differently, which I'm okay with, and some things that I kind of wish they didn't. Let's get started with the things they did do that I like. So first and foremost, they do the similar story where it's like, you know, these kids are of a certain age around like, you know, young kids. But instead of being like you're 10 years old going out on your own, in this game, your main character lives in an orphanage. And at this point, you and your friends in the orphanage end up getting brought on to by the Tamers Society or Tamers Guild to start working for them as tamers, because the world that these characters inhabit is actually a world that has been decimated or heavily damaged by their Nexomon creatures, most particularly a set of them known as Tyrants. They are like, think of them as like mythical critters. And they're basically all fighting to determine who will be the king tyrant that runs society. And unfortunately, humans are kind of caught in the middle of it. So they kind of give it a whole like post-apocalyptic story going on. And it takes like a lot more, interesting turns as far as, you know, grim, not grim as in like people get murdered and crap, but grim as in this journey isn't all sunshine and farts. Travel, which I kind of like as well. So, but at this point, the main character hits the road and you are pretty much taught by this ghost of a dead tamer how to catch Nexomon after a series of events. And similarly to Pokemon, you get the item. In this case, they're called Nexo Traps, and you have to throw the trap at the Nexomon and then enter a series of button commands to attempt to catch it. I find that kind of funny because I wonder if that was meant to pay homage to like when people used to like mash the B button to think that it actually made it easier to catch Pokemon. But you have to put in a series of commands. Now, here's one of the things about the game that I kind of I don't like, even though it's not particularly bad, but we'll get to that. So when you catch Pokemon normally, the idea was that, hey, they have a catch rate. You catch it, boom. If you don't, you don't. And usually you would use different balls to increase your odds. And Nexomon, you have Nexatraps, but there's like multiple criteria that is used to determine if you catch this thing or not, or rather augment the percentage of the chances of you catching it. First of all, it's the normal idea. Get their hit points into the red, and that's considered how weary they are. The more weary they are, the more it adds to the percentage of capture opportunity. A new thing in this game is feeding them. After you've seen one and added to your whatever this game's version of a Pokedex is, I think it's a journal, you will then be able to see what kind of foods the Nexomon likes to eat. So you can acquire that food either from finding it on the ground or certain stores and vendors, and you can feed the Nexomon those things to increase your chances of catching it. Also, their status effects. And then there's like another item called the whistle. Whistles pertain to each of the elements that Nexomon can be. And it's a stackable bonus where the more whistles you have of a certain element, the higher your odds of getting, of catching it going on with it. It has like 3% chance effectiveness per whistle. So all these things combined, you end up with a percentage. And what this ends up meaning is that you will likely miss captures more often than you would like. As in, you'll throw the ball, you know, the button commands, and you will fit. Oh, the other thing I forgot to mention, there are different types of Nexomon traps that are also more effective for catching Nexomon of that type. So all those things combined determine your chances of catching it. And unfortunately, you will be surprised how many times you mess up. And Nexo traps aren't cheap. So you're going to, there's a bit of grinding involved to get some more Nexo traps if you're the type that wants to catch every Nexomon you see in a certain area or something. So words of the wise, catch a few, get vaulting and come back later when you really feel like you need to see that thing in action or whatever. And that's one thing that's interesting about the game, like in that regard, like money doesn't grow on trees. Nexa traps don't grow on trees. And in addition to go along with that, neither does healing items, which is interesting because a big complaint a lot of people tend to have about Pokemon main games. I'm sorry if this seems like I'm bringing up Pokemon a lot, but I think it's a very good comparison because of how similar this game is to that.
I mean, look at the names.
Yeah, it is true. Literally Nexamon and Tamer instead of Trainer. No one's fooled by this.
But I don't think they're trying to fool anyone. I think they're very clear in that they're paying homage to Pokemon.
Does it do enough
to stand on its own?
I know, and I think I'm going to end up getting to that in the end, which is a good thing. Like, honestly, I guess, well, spoiler, since I feel like I'm slightly on the spot on that, I do like the game. So the other thing about it is that a lot of complaints that people have had about Pokemon over the years is that the main game is pretty easy to the point that people start doing Nuzlocke challenges and all that stuff to kind of spruce it up a bit. Nexamon is what happens when someone says, you know what, we should make the game a little more difficult. And that has both positive and negative qualities to it. Because the positive is that, yes, I do enjoy having more challenging battles. In this case, you'll be playing singles. One versus one with your roster of up to 6 Nexamon in your belt. And the enemy can also have up to 6 Nexamon on their belt when you get into a battle. Elemental strengths and weaknesses also exist in this game, though sometimes the strengths and weaknesses may not be the most obvious thing to see. Like, I swear I feel like grass is strong against psychic. But when you get into combat, if you get a Pokemon, if a Pokemon faints and you throw another Pokemon in, that's like a free switch. Pokemon dies, your one comes in, and now you get a turn. And Nexamon, if you switch Pokemon mid-battle, that's the turn, is putting the Nexamon in. However, if your Nexamon faints and you put a new Nexamon in to replace it, that also counts as a turn. So basically, you don't want Nexamon to faint because you are literally just giving the opponent a free turn after killing your dude. On the positive, it's like, okay, that's cool. It's kind of like a reward for knocking the guy out. On the negative, it kind of sucks if you got a Nexamon in the back that's kind of barely hanging on, and he's getting thrown out just to pretty much get killed. So that kind of blows. But aside from that, it's similar ideas. You have 4 attacks ranging from various elements. But one thing I like about this game, actually, is that they do differently, is how speed works. So in Pokemon, you have a Pokemon speed determines how fast it is. And there's also priority attack, you know, priority level 1, 2, blah, blah, blah. In this game, it's a combination of the Nexamon speed stat plus the speed stat of the attack. So you might have an attack that does some damage and it has a speed of 56, and an attack that does a lot of damage but has a speed of 24. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, I think I'm still fast enough for this guy that even with the slow, powerful attack, I'll go first. And also you're taking a wonder if the other guy's going to use a powerful, slow attack also to kind of balance it out. But you can also be like, you know, I'm about to die. I don't want to switch out a guy. So I think I want to take this chance to do like a quick hit with my fast but weak attack, and hopefully it kills the guy. So there's a little bit of added elements of strategy to that that I genuinely came to appreciate in the game as I played it. So with the way how this works is that as you're playing around the game, you're exploring it, you come to realize that the overall goal of the game becomes to locate a bunch of tyrant Nexamon, defeating them, thereby using them to summon the light tyrant, which is supposed to be a good one. And then that supposedly saves the day. But of course, there's other weird elements that factor in, including like some person who stops time to talk to you and all kinds of weird mess. So honestly, the story has me slightly interested because I'm curious as about where they're going to go with it, because it doesn't look like it's as simple as, hey, happy-go-lucky journey to catch a bunch of Nexamon. It's more like the world's actually on the verge of death. And behind these colorful graphics, people are dying out there. People are starving in the wild. So it's an interesting, like, you know, juxtaposition of, you know, graphic style to like severity of the mission and also the humor. And for the record, the humor in this game is pretty solid too. Your main character is a solid protagonist, aside from like the occasional character option for dialogue you get. But to balance that out, they give you a cat friend named Coco that tags along with you. And Coco is purely comic relief. Like, tons of sarcastic replies, tons of like fourth wall breaks in their dialogue. And I expected it to be cheesy, but I genuinely laughed out loud, not to use the meme version, but the actual action of laughing out loud multiple times as I played the game and Coco responded to ridiculous nonsense, usually related to Trump breaking tropes in the genre. So I honestly enjoyed that element. The really only things that I wish they did do, or at least in this case, more so aped on Pokemon 4, was in this game, all the Nexomon have single elements. So it's a grass type Nexomon or fire type Nexomon. There are no grass fire Nexomon, which lessens some of the strategic abilities you can use. They do sometimes get mixed of attacks. So you'll get multiple elements with one guy, but not having two elements shakes up a little bit on the strategy line. So I wish there was a little bit of that going on. I also wish that it was easier to get money, because the best way to get money in this game is to battle trainers like Pokemon, but trainers can regenerate for rematches quicker than you'd expect. Like, you go off the screen, you go two screens over, potentially come back, and the trainer's ready to go again, which could backfire if you're trying to walk past them to get to a healing spot and they're like, yo, I'm ready to rematch you. Let's see what's going on, buddy. So just be mindful of that. There is quick travel that you unlock, which is kind of nice, though. As far as it goes, the music is also pretty nice. I enjoy the music in the game. Battles, there's – on the one positive there also with battles is that you can – you walk in tall grass to fight monsters, but you can see the grass that's holding a Nexomon wiggling. So there are no random encounters in this game, too. You choose when you want to fight, essentially, which is nice. I'm trying to think – what I may be missing out on as far as descriptions go, because I feel like I've rambled the game to death. Oh, that's what I meant to ask. That's what I meant to say. Okay. Ways you get things. So there's stores in the game where when you come across the main store and also some of the merchants, even you have a tamer rank. And as you level up your tamer rank, the store will sell more stuff and you'll get it for a cheaper amount of money. In addition to that, to make the different traps, aside from buying them from overpriced merchants, you can build them yourself by finding elemental shards out in the wild. And you can then go to a particular shop, combine them into traps, like elemental traps, to catch Nexomon and, of course, increase the odds of catching them. There is quests that you can undertake in the game, usually given by NPCs if you come across them. And the quests usually involve bringing them a Nexomon that they want for trade, or a certain number of items or money, and then they'll give you a reward in return. One thing I hate about that, though, is that the game does keep track of your quests that you found, but they don't tell you where the quest was located if you're trying to get back to it. You just have to know where it is based on what the description is.
I hate that.
I dislike that. You and me both, sir. It's annoying. Really annoying. But aside from that, the quests are there. And then there is also just... the equipment element. So this game has four attacks that the Nexomon can have, but in addition to that, the form of equipment in the game comes in the form of cores. You can create cores at the lab in the main city using shards and those cores provide you with a variety of different effects: increased attack power, defense power, increased speed, increased experience gain, increased money earned, just a variety of different things. You can equip up the four cores per Nexomon, and you'll want to do that primarily experience and greed, because I'm experienced and greedy. I wanted those things. So now I think I've rambled as much as I can think of about this game, because I've pretty much said everything there is to do in the game. And my ultimate thought on it is that I think it's a fun title. Just come into it knowing that it is not a short romp by virtue of the grind alone. You're going to be grinding not just because you want to see evolutions of your Nexomon, but also simply because you're going to be backtracking just to keep your dudes healed up between either random encounters or tamer battles. So just give you that forewarning. But if you're a fan of Pokemon games or monster catching games in general, I feel like this is a solid, alternative to play around with, just to see what other monster designs another company can come up with. Which, for the record, there are legitimate. After seeing over 800 new Pokemon, I'm surprised that there are a bunch of Nexomon, which are about, I think it's like 381 in this game. I've seen a lot in this game where I'm like, this is a pretty cool Nexomon design. I want to catch that. Too big. So you know, there are some cool ones that you'll see in the game that you'll be like, I want to use that in my team. So
cool. So overall, your official verdict, it's Pokemon. It's $20. What do you say?
I honestly think it's a buy. Oh, last thing I should mention, it's single player only. So a downside is that you're not going to build a Nexomon team to battle your friends. The positive is that you don't have to play this game thinking about a meta game. You're just going to play it saying, I want to catch Nexomon to play through the game, which is also cool. So,
all right. Sounds good.
It is.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Alpha Set by Paugi, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released August 25th on PS4 and Vita, 27th on the Switch for $7.99. This new puzzle is a mix of crosswords and Sudoku, challenging both your vocabulary and your deduction skills. There are 26 blank squares. Each letter of the alphabet must be placed exactly once in order to fill the grid with valid English words. Reveal a terrible joke each time you solve a puzzle. In Lightwood fashion, right, Chris?
Did they actually call it terrible?
Yes, reveal a terrible joke each time you solve a puzzle.
That's amazing.
Yes. They know what they're doing.
They know. Well, okay. I'm glad that description wasn't much longer, because that would be the entire review. Okay. So finally, by the way, a Paugi game, or Paugi.
I don't know. Right? I say Paugi.
Well, we had them confirm once that it was Paugi. I remember now. But yeah, like, it's been a long ass time since I've gotten to review one of their games. So it was really nice to see this one come through. I even had to start a PS4 European account just to get it, which is nice. Now I have a little race car, and my name is Chris UK.
Chris UK, nice. I think mine's JoeCamNet EU.
Nice, nice. I had to actually look up I had to Google a London post office box, zip code, whatever. They call it something else there, and I made one up, so I don't know. Not made one up, but I mean, I looked one up and just chose it at random. Anywho's, I'm banning this review because it's very short. So the way this game goes, okay, so there is, so, you know, like I said, Paugi, we know them because they basically come out with these word games where the premise is always very simple. It's simply one kind of puzzle, and you just do it again and again until it's all done. And this is no exception. So yes, and I should have written down how many puzzles there are. There's a lot of puzzles. It's like,
I'll see if I can look it up.
Yeah, look it up while I'm talking. So basically, in every puzzle, there are words arranged like a crossword. However, most of the letters in each word is already filled in, and your job is to basically go through the alphabet panel on the right side and choose a letter and place it in one of the blank panels. Now, of course, the trick here is that each letter can only be used once, and a lot of the words will make sense with more than one different kind of letter. So it's really all about trying it, trying to get at the easier words first, like the real obvious ones. Like, it's just missing one letter and you know exactly which one it could possibly be. And then kind of whittle it down to the ones that have multiple choices, or just like kind of fill them out as you like. And, you know, you can always erase your, you know, you can always erase what you've done. And there's also a free checker that you can use. And it's one of those things where it does not penalize you for using the checker. It's just completely at your discretion.
Oh, that's
it will
good.
Tell you if you've made any mistakes. And that's simply what it does.
Yeah, I can't find anything that says how many puzzles there are. I looked on both the store pages. I don't see anything.
Oh, okay. That's
too lazy to do any more work than that.
It's a lot. It's it's like, I think it's 60 at least. So anyways, yeah. So like, basically, it's just all about, like, I was actually surprised at how challenging the game is, and it seems to not really scale in difficulty. I'm sure like there's more obscure words used in the later puzzles, but like, because you can actually choose any puzzle at any time. You could just scroll through and like pick one. So it doesn't make you do them in any linear order. And I tried like the very last puzzle and I was doing just fine on it. So I think that it's a very even challenge. And yeah, it really does, test out your vocabulary, because not only, are there words that you might might not recognize. Like, you know, it doesn't get too advanced, I don't think, but there are, you know, there's a couple of obscure ones in there. For the most part, it's just like, you know, you just keep punching in letters or something until you have like an aha moment. And like I said, it's especially useful if you see a couple of obvious ones and start doing those. And plus it helps me, it really helped me to take like, to basically use Scrabble scoring because I'm a very good Scrabble player. So I'll be like, okay, what set of letters looks like it would most fit an X in? And so I look for like an X or a Z opportunity. And that kind of helped me eliminate those letters so that the ones that are used in way more words, like the vowels and stuff, were easier to place. So, you know, there's little ways that you can strategize it with yourself, but overall it's a Palgi game, so it's just a good puzzly time. Puzzles are expertly crafted. The puns are expertly terrible. It's not just puns.
Any good ones, like, you know, off the top of your head?
Yes. I think it's the joke that you get after the after puzzle number two. But yeah, the guy was like, or the dog comes up and is like, I saw an ad for a cemetery plot, and I thought that's the last thing I need. Wasn't a pun, it was just a bad joke. Yeah, expect a lot of sighs like that. Yeah, and like I said, as far as the options go, they're very limited. You can do light mode or dark mode. It just turns the background from white to kind of a light gray, and you can turn the music on or off, which I like the music, but I do turn it off because I like to listen to other things while I'm doing puzzles and stuff,
like the SML podcast.
Like the SML podcast, exactly. Not just any podcast.
The SML podcast.
The one where I get to hear my own voice.
Yeah, right, Purnell?
Fucking yeah!
Which is funny because we can't hear the samples in the Skype call, so I knew that was actual Purnell yelling.
It was both.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Oh, my Lord. All right. Alpha set by Paugi. $8 on it. What do you say?
I say it's a buy it. For people who like word games, I actually have not come across this one yet in my travels. So it was a really fun new experience and not just one of the classics. So, yeah, if you're looking to give Paugi games a try and you want to try something that's not standard crosswords or word search or, you know, anagrams or anything like that, like, give this one a go. It's surprisingly challenging for as simple as the premise is. So I say it's a buy it.
Awesome. All right, next game to talk about is called Hexagroove Tactical DJ, developed and published by Ichigoichi. Ichigoichi A, released August 28th on Xbox One for $29.99. I had to think on the name there for a second. Hexagroove combines elements of strategy, rhythm, and action games in a unique blend of self-expression. Your goal as a DJ is to combine musical loops in real time to regulate a virtual audience's energy, working them into a state of euphoria with your artistic skills. The action swings from contemplative to frantic as you move between song sections in one of 10 dance music genres. Purnell, we talked about this one earlier in the show with the creator, so why don't you just tell us what you thought of it?
Honestly, I'm glad we had that dialogue with him, too, because I was able to experience some of the stuff that he mentioned after getting better at the game, and I actually did get better at it. And what I ended up realizing is that I genuinely did find myself enjoying the game. It's fun to play, and once you start unlocking the different sound patterns and the traits that are associated with them, you find yourself deciding which loop to play I'll call it an instrument. You're trying to decide on which loop to play on an instrument. You get to the point where you're like, you know, I have the room to spare. I'm going to play the one that gives me more euphoria at the cost of my health, you know, stuff like that. And you're honestly having a good bit of time with it. The creative element is going to be dependent on the actual player, though, because there are people out there just like, I want to get high scores or just do well on a song and then walk away from it. But there will be other people that will get access to these different loop sounds and instrument combinations you can pull off, and they will likely want to come up with some really cool sounds fitting within the genre that's being provided to them, the genre and the instruments being provided to them. So, and for those people, it's like a double bonus. So
I honestly wouldn't be shocked to see somebody do a full DJ set using this game. Maybe not like a totally full possible DJ set, but you know what I mean? I could see this being used in an actual DJ set.
It totally could. Like, I feel like the only thing it could possibly, the only thing that would suck if you try is, unless you can do it in freestyle and I didn't notice it, changing genre. Like, if you wanted to do chip rock, for example, they give he gives you a lot to work with in chip rock, or obviously all of them really, but I'm just mentioning chip rock, but he gives you a lot to work with. But eventually I can picture our audience being like, okay, I want the next thing. Let's switch over to something. You're like, fuck, I just got chip rock. So
quit to menu, load up new songs.
Exactly. Just keep pumping your hand, keep pumping one hand while with the other hand, you're messing with the controller to switch.
That's why you have two of them going. That's why turntables have two record players. So you could swap between them. So you have two Xboxes set up. And then you just switch between
two hexagrooves.
Yes, two copies of hexagroove playing. And you're just swapping between the two of them as you need.
Now, that's actually hilarious, yet also effective. I can see that being ridiculous. Yet that's a MagFest thing right there.
David's going to listen to this and he's going to be like, you know, they said they had one good idea every show. They had two this time.
Damn right. Holla! But honestly, like, it, I feel like they did a, he did a good, well, I guess it's because at least the studio, but they, all of them did a fantastic job with this game. Like, it, like I said in the interview, it's very unlike any rhythm game I've ever played. Like, it has some similarities, obviously, but overall, it's an experience that you won't get from any other rhythm game. And in that regard, I think it is totally worth someone's time. If you're up for paying full price for games, I say it's worth full price, but if you're the type that also is like, I want to take a bit of a, I want to take a wait for a sale or something, that's fine too. But ultimately, no matter what you decide to do, I think it's a buy it title if you're into rhythm games.
I would honestly go more on a try it side for two reasons. One is the price is a little high, but I understand music licensing is a bitch, and that's just part of the cost of music games and licensing, so that's out of our control. I just wish it were a little cheaper, personal preference. Number two, it is just really complex, and there is a lot to learn in this game. And if you don't have the patience to sit and learn this game, you're not going to have a good time. But if you,
I'll be honest, like that's what I thought. It was just that dialogue with David, like when he made that comment about when he confirmed that turning off loops isn't particularly a bad thing, that's when it clicked. Because the one element that was lacking in, like, you remember how in the interview I was like, man, I keep failing this darn song, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. The one thing that I was screwing up is that when you play a note, the note generates euphoria, which is in the center of the screen. And you can tell how powerful the generation is by the thickness of the purple orbs that are flowing to the center of the screen. Over time, it generates less euphoria until it eventually generates no euphoria. Now, before we realized that what was going on, all we knew was, you know, if the notes are blue, that's good. If the notes are green, you might want to change them or whatever, right? But due to the fact that you want that euphoria meter to trip up, you're going to find yourself thinking, you know, this thing isn't putting in the work anymore. And due to the fact that I am getting a little bit low and I want to push this euphoria up, I'm going to intentionally shut that one off. So you go over and you shut it off, and then there's a beat that's going around the outside of the screen. 1, 2, 3, 4. And once you hear someone tell you this is what that is, it becomes very noticeable. But when I didn't know what it was just kind of like, oh, it's like visual aesthetics. But once I realized it wasn't, what you end up doing is going to turn this off on the first beat, and on the fourth beat, turn it right back on, but with a different loop or the same loop. It doesn't even matter until you start getting the, you know, the powers. And at that point, you start generating euphoria again. So as long as you keep that going, you don't bomb the mini games that happen between, you know, during the set transitions, you just pretty much stay alive. No. And it's odd because it sounds like a lot when we're talking about it, but it's just saying, I'm going to sit down and just do it. And if they're listening to this episode, they'll have the guy tell him the spot, like, oh, dude, no, that thing that the tall guy did, he's fucking it up. Do this instead. And that'll resolve it. Like, it just clicks. That was like the missing piece of the puzzle. So that's why, like, I wanted to make sure I made that element of, like, if you do music games already, like, if you're into, like, the whole set of them all, like, getting in, learning the rules, whatever, this is totally doable. It's just
absolutely
that one bit.
Yeah, I agree on that. But yeah, it's a solid game. Rhythm fans absolutely should keep their eyes on this one and give it a go. And thanks again, David, for coming on and chatting with us. That was really fun.
It was hilarious.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called A Hero and a Garden, developed by NPCKC, published by Rattalaika Games, released August 28th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Once upon a time, there was a princess trapped in a tower by an evil witch. Would anyone attempt to rescue her? A brave hero attempted to save her, but things didn't exactly work out for him. In a twist of fate, our young hero is now forced to repay all the damage he caused to the local monster villagers by growing a garden? Chris?
It's always good when the description ends with a question mark.
Yes.
Who even knows what this is? Okay, so this is basically a Hero in a Garden is a visual novel and kind of like a button fidgety game. Because like to call it gameplay, it would be I don't know. I don't know that I would. So
it'd be unfair to gameplay.
Like It's meant to be like a clicker.
A clicker. Yeah, exactly. So, yes, your hero, whom we eventually learn is named Cyrus. Basically, yeah, the story begins that it's interesting, too, because like it's the intro is so vague. It took me two times starting the game over to figure out what was really going on. Dark Meek is asking if it's on Xbox or Steam. I actually don't know. Yes. I played it on PS4.
It's okay. On everything. A Hero it's in the Garden, Xbox, Switch, PS4, $4.99.
Yeah, it's a Rattalaika, so yeah. Figure it's on everything.
Yep.
So your hero basically is trying to rescue a princess who is in a tower or whatever. And, you know, nobody would go and try and rescue this princess because there's an evil witch who, you know, nobody wants to deal with. So our hero decides that he's going to do it, and he marches up, and before he can climb the tower and claim the princess, he is hit by a bolt of something and cursed. So now his curse is that basically he wakes up in this like kind of I'm gonna say like a it's weird because it has a storefront but it's otherwise a garden, so like a florist. Anyways, it's kind of slowly explained to him that basically what he's there to do is he's there to pick berries that grow really fast, but only when a human is around them, which, you know, is why they don't grow when you're doing the actual story time bits. And, you know, so there's two modes of the game. One is where you are basically picking berries, and it starts off with just one. There's one berry, bush in the middle, and every time a berry pops up, you can hit square. If three berries pop up, a basket appears, and you can press square, and it picks all three berries. If you do nothing, I don't know what happens, because I didn't do that. I was like, I'm getting the best ending, so I'm going to pick everything. As the story progresses, like basically you're given orders, like how many berries you're supposed to pick. And it starts at like 10 and then goes to like 15, 20, and then all the way up to 100. And, you know, of course, it starts over every time you get a new order. And every time that you fill an order, a little bit more story happens. And eventually you get more bushes up to 5. Each one is mapped to a button, so eventually you've got square going, triangle going, circle going, R1 and L1 going, and just as the berries appear, they all appear like, you know, intermittently, and you just press the button as they appear, and just keep picking them until you fulfill the orders, you know, give the order, get the storyline, and then every time there's storyline, of course, since you're selling the berries, you get money, and there's a list of different things that your hero has destroyed in this monster town that you must rebuild with the money that you earn. And of course, once he's done with that, then the curse is lifted and he can leave. But as the story goes on, you find that it's more complicated than that. You learn more about the princess. You learn more about the hero's relation to the princess. You learn more about the witch. You befriend certain monsters, and you even befriend monsters that you have like hurt with your actions. And so a lot of it is like your hero really dealing with his role as a hero and like what that means. And, you know, that's kind of like a popular thing now, thanks to like Undertale. And, you know, we're seeing Moon come out, and that's like one of the first games to actually do the whole, you know, the hero is not actually the hero type of thing. And so this is like kind of like that. It's a little bit of a an alternate take on like the morality of fantasy tropes, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting read, and it's just basically broken up by staring at a bunch of bushes and pushing a button as you see berries appear, and then checking your list and seeing if you have enough, or and then, you know, doing the stories and then buying the things. And, you know, you keep doing that until you get to the ending. There's several endings. You know, basically the more orders you fill for different characters, the more that character likes you, and therefore you can have an ending with that character. But if you do what I did and try to get all of the berries all of the time and, you know, clear out all of the different levels of things, you actually do get a mini ending with every character anyway. You can just choose to have like a kind of second ending with them. And then, yeah, as far as that goes, the visual novel, like actual options are for things like, you know, fast tracking the story until you come to an option that you'd be able to make. And, you know, like kind of the usual stuff for Rattalaika. Sadly, there's no text changing options, so I wouldn't call this one of the more accessible games. It's all kind of written in this fairly standard, sort of looks like a hand-drawn style of font. Music's pretty good. You can listen to the entire soundtrack if you've heard all the songs. There's a gallery and, you know, kind of a collection of endings and things like that. So all in all, you know, pretty good little package for a $5 Rattalaika game. And like I said, the actual story, it wouldn't have worked if the story itself wasn't interesting, but I actually did find myself wanting to see how, you know, the hero character would interact and kind of grow internally as he got to know all of these different creatures.
Yeah. Paul, did you play this one as well?
I did. I beat it too.
Yeah, me too.
I was actually very desperately trying to find out if it was the same developer as Seraph and the Ultimate Suite. The art style is very similar, but it doesn't look like it's the same artist.
Yeah. Isn't that the one? Is that the one I played too?
Yeah, I think so. Where you have like the candy girl. And
yeah. No, it seemed a little different than that.
Maybe there's another one I'm thinking of. It has like the very common chibi like comic art style to it. It's very simple, very over cute.
And, it's like a little kiddish, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's very flat, like there's no shading or anything. It's cute, it's adorable, it works for it. I'm not mad about it or anything. It's just that I was just describing it because you didn't.
Oh yeah, sorry.
That's their only game on Xbox, but they have a couple others on PC.
Yeah, it looks like they have a really solid portfolio on itch.io, however you say it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I saw one of their other ones somewhere else and just, I don't know, made a mental crosswire somewhere.
Maybe.
I do shit like that. But anyway, I thought a lot of the same things as Chris. It was easy to play, but it was actually an interesting kind of story where you're like, well, you know, seeing the main character actually have to interact and deal with the fact that he fucked shit up when he was trying to save the princess. I thought it was cutey, and it wasn't something that would, like, I'd be like, oh, putting down the release date on my calendar or anything for it. Mm-hmm. But hey, for $5, if I come across it, yeah, I'd pick it up.
Nice.
I think the one thing, I don't know if it has this, I couldn't find it in any options, but I would like to have been able to read this without actually playing the game part, like for a second time through. It was fine the first time through. I was like, okay, I mean, you know, there's really not much to this. I don't even know if you can lose it because it was too easy. I would have had to try.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a bad ending in this game.
I don't think so. I think you just, like, as far as I'm aware, it doesn't progress until you fulfill the requirements. I actually was just, like, mindlessly filling the requests and then looked up and had, like, $7,000. And I was like, oh, I guess I should actually go, like, fix the roads and shit.
Yeah, and once you hit the 100 threshold, then that usually ends a character's, like, arc with you.
Yeah.
And the square one is finished so much sooner than the rest that I was like, okay, maybe there's something that will happen if I keep collecting them. So I kept collecting them. Nothing. All that happens is that it just caps out at $9.99
and
you don't do anything. Nothing else comes of it. So once you're done with a certain arc, you can just feel free to stop and just let that basket sit there.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah. There are different endings because you choose one of the characters to go to the fair with.
Yeah.
But you can save scum it for the achievements. You can actually just save it right before you make your final choice.
Well, at least in the version I played, you can't when it's on the choosing screen.
Yeah,
I didn't
at that point, but you can't.
So I didn't know that. So the last save I had made was like an hour prior. So,
so I messed that up for myself. I have to confess that, like, I have a pretty bad habit with visual novels. Like, anytime I've made any series of choices, I'm like, well, save it here. And then that way, at any point, I'm like, I can go back. I don't care. So I knocked it out, but I just have to go back and reload my save and do the different choices over to finish the completion.
I'll just play the game again. I mean, it takes really, if you play it fairly casually, like I did, it takes about an hour to maybe an hour 15 minutes to get through the story. So I could just get there again and just save scum the rest of the endings.
All right. Well, $5, your official verdict from the both of you. Buy it. Yes.
I think it's a buy it. I actually really enjoyed this one.
Because it's $5. I mean,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it would be a great game for kids, too, because it, you know, can kind of teach them a little bit of like thinking about what they do in video games and stuff like that, which is a valuable thing to be able to approach something from a different standpoint. But also, like, it's a nice little, you know, kind of, you know, do what I, you know, interaction. It's a very simple interaction. So I think that it would be good for us, a young set.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Congratulations, everybody. We're still here. We did it. Thanks to Alia.
Did we truly do it?
Yeah, we did, really? Pernell. We did. Don't negate our accomplishments, Pernell.
Are you sure?
Oh, no, I'm not.
I'm sure we totally did.
Thanks again to all of you for being here, doing your thing. Thanks to Tim for coming on, doing his review and chatting about his Lego escapades. Thanks again to David from Ichigo Ichie for coming on, chatting about Hexagroove with us. It is an awesome game. Go check it out. It is on Xbox and Switch for $30. Go give it a look, give it a play, make some cool music. And we're going to end the show with the credits theme from Hexagroove. So, anybody have any final words?
No, you, sir.
Oh, I was just going to say, go play Moon.
Cow jumped over the moon.
Yeah, jump over that shit.